to the United States, shot dead for allegedly being Jewish.
Being outside the Capitol Jewish Museum.
That was from NBC. We have a problem there. We will give you more on those details on that story and look at the spread of anti-Semitism. Ambushed in the White House. Yes, President Trump is at it again. This time, South African President Ramaphosa.
Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know.
There's a pattern of behaviour there. And with the sentencing review announced today, the man who's commissioned it and who's led it is here taking your questions later in the show. 7 o'clock news is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, two Israeli embassy staff have been shot dead near a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. Police say the 30-year-old suspect, who has been arrested, shouted "Free Palestine" at the scene of the attack. It happened at about 9 p.m. local time. Yehiel Leiter is the Israeli ambassador to the U.S.
The couple that was gunned down tonight is a young couple about to be engaged. The young man purchased a ring this week with the intention of proposing to his girlfriend next week in Jerusalem. They were a beautiful couple who came to enjoy an evening in Washington's cultural center.
An independent review has recommended a series of measures to end overcrowding in England and Wales prisons. More offenders could serve community sentences and some violent criminals could be released early. Mandatory chemical castration could be introduced for the most serious sex offenders. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
It's a similar system to what David Gawkes saw in Texas, and it means most inmates will be able to earn their way out after just a third of their sentence, but only if they behave and they engage with programs. We understand, though, that ministers will reject a similar proposal for the most dangerous offenders, meaning they'll stay locked up for just as long.
The Prime Minister is set to sign the controversial deal to transfer the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. It follows a series of setbacks over plans to give up sovereignty of the territory and lease back the Diego Garcia military base. It's expected to cost the UK billions of pounds over a 99-year term. A member of the Irish rap group Kneecap has been charged with a terror offence. Liam O'Hanna allegedly displayed a flag in support of Hezbollah at a gig in North London in November last year. The 27-year-old from Belfast is due to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court next month. Tottenham are Europa League champions after a 1-0 victory over Manchester United in Bilbao last night. It's Spurs' first silverware since 2008 and qualifies them for next season's Champions League. Manager Ange Postecoglou says it's the toughest thing he's ever done.
It's fair to say that it's been really challenging because, you know, wherever else I've had success by this stage, I've kind of had the faith and trust of everybody, and here it's been different.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 87.86 after closing up 5 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, largely dry with bright spells elsewhere. A high of 21 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
When it comes to the beautiful game, Barclays is here for it all. From packed stadiums, top of your lungs singing, and last minute winners,
to muddy grassroots pitches, halftime oranges, and mum and dad stood on the sidelines. For 25 years, Barclays has invested millions into community sports. Because there is no football without grassroots football. Search Barclays Football to find out more.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 7, Thursday, the 22nd of May. They turned up the heat over those winter fuel payments, and it would appear the Prime Minister buckled. But how long have you got to wait? Will they be in place for this coming winter? And how many of you, if you're listening and you want it, how many of you will get it? We'll try and drill down on that side of it, and also, of course, look at the political side as well. To the United States, to Washington, this horrific story. Two members, believed to be a couple from the Israeli embassy, shot dead as they visited a Jewish museum. Pamela A. Smith is a police chief in Washington, D.C.
Once in handcuffs, the suspect identified where he discarded the weapon, and that weapon has been recovered. The suspect chanted, "Free, free Palestine," while in custody.
We'll look at the growing wave, and now fatal growing wave, of anti-Semitism across much of the world. Back home,
sex offenders may face chemical castration, and dangerous criminals will be released early under radical sentencing reforms announced today. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with all the details.
And those sentencing reforms have been put forward by David Gawk, the former Conservative Justice Minister. He's here taking your calls on what you'll hear about that in the last hour of the show, so do stay tuned for that. We go back across the Atlantic again. We go back to Washington. Another ambush. It's a pattern of behaviour now for Donald Trump, isn't it? He went after the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who afterwards responded,
"People who do get killed, unfortunately, through criminal activity, are not only white people. Majority of them are black people."
And in the world of business, the sparks still flying for Marks and Sparks as their profits take another tumble.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, it was a long time coming, wasn't it? But eventually and finally the government realised they'd made a mistake. Here's a question for you. As I've said many times, many, many times, and I think I wrote it in the paper last week in the Sunday Express, sometimes a U-turn is a good idea. I always use this example. If you're hammering the wrong way up the M1, it's probably, and you want to get to Leicester, it's probably a good idea if we turn off before Leeds. That would seem to make sense. But in the world of politics, timing is everything, and have they left it too long? Now, the decision to cut these payments has haunted ministers since the Chancellor stood up. That was back in July to announce the government had no other option with that, do you remember, £22 billion black hole inherited from the Conservatives? A figure, I need to say, that the Conservatives challenge. Opposition to the decision came from all quarters, charities, some of the Labour-owned MPs. They all said this does not work. It was a heated debate over this unnecessary targeting of the most vulnerable. And it's been the job of the government's top team put the case for the defence ever since. Let's listen to some of them.
Yesterday, I had to make changes across the board. Transport projects, a new hospital building programme, an investment fund, as well as the difficult decision to restrict the winter fuel payment to pensioners who receive pension credit. This is not a decision I wanted to make. It's not a decision I expected to make. But we had to take action to close that gap.
We've looked at the books. There's £22 billion missing from the books. And we've got to deal with that. I'm not going to ignore it. Got to take tough decisions. Targeting the winter fuel payments is a tough decision.
We inherited a £22 billion black hole that even the IFS didn't know about prior to the general election. And that has meant we've had to make some difficult choices. We've had to means test the winter fuel payment. We know this is a difficult choice, and we was left with, you know, very difficult circumstances because the previous government and what they did.
Coming back to this issue of winter fuel allowance, the Chancellor did protect winter fuel allowance for the poorest pensioners. There is the warm homes discount. So in terms of protecting the poorest pensioners this winter, the government is taking action. Of course, that doesn't mean that getting rid of the winter fuel allowance for others has been a popular decision.
And if you're trying to put names to those voices, it was Chancellor Rachel Reeves, followed by the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, then the DPM, the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, followed by Health Secretary Wes Streeting. But after all those weeks and assurances that they had to stay with it, nothing would change, here came the U-turn.
I recognise that people are still feeling the pressure of the cost of living crisis, including pensioners. We want to ensure that as we go forward, more pensioners are eligible for winter fuel payments. As you would expect, Mr. Speaker, we will only make decisions we can afford. That is why we will look at that as part of a fiscal event.
Let's bring into the conversation Gitto Harry, who's former Downing Street Director of Communications, serving under Boris Johnson, who joins me now. Gitto, is it fair to say that decisions like this are a bit like comedy? It's all about timing, and they've let this go too long. Good morning.
Yes, and if you get the timing wrong, nobody really appreciates the decision. And I happen to think that, unpopular though it was a brave decision. It was a decision taken for the right reasons. It was to raise a significant sum of money from a group of people who have been quite well looked after in general. We still had, even at the toughest of times, the triple lock that means that pensioners get more money year after year when students don't and most people don't. And the problem with it, Nick, is if you pay a ransom once, the kidnapper comes back and takes their other child. And that's the problem now. People are going to look at other targets.
Is it fair to say, I hear what you say, Gitto, and you're a very savvy political watcher, but it would appear much of the population would not agree with you if I refer you back to the local elections earlier this month?
Absolutely. It's become sort of iconic. It's become a sort of, I don't know, one policy that represents things that people dislike about this government. But if they actually break it down, and if you were to challenge people and really ask them, is that really what you don't like about this government? I'm not sure, considering that one in four pensioners are at least paper millionaires, that this was the hill to die on. It certainly did get a sort of resonance, and they failed to turn around the argument, and now they've caved in. But it's a very dangerous thing to do.
Well, what do we look for now? How will we see that the ship is taking on more water? What we should we be observing?
So if they've said, you know, sensibly, you could say that maybe they got the threshold wrong, and that they caught too many people who were not, you know, sufficiently well off to handle this hit to their income, they could pull that off. But why do that just when it's about to get warm and fuel bills are about to be the lowest they are year after year? You know, this is something to do when the evidence is presented to you that people genuinely are struggling. They haven't done that. So now what's going to happen is people are already talking about the child benefit cap. People are talking about some of the welfare reforms. And if they don't reform welfare, a budget, a massive hole in the public finances of about $300 billion a year when you tot up all the different benefits, if you don't go looking there for savings, then you never get the money that is needed. So whichever government is in power, to spend on education, on defence, on building roads and railways and new energy sort of plants, you end up, and frankly, it's sad in a way, but they're going to end up like every other Labour government, you know, who leave office with unemployment higher than it was when they came in, and with the public finances in a worse situation than when they came in.
Lastly, on a political footing, some commentators, journalists getting very excited. The Chancellor appeared to be defending the policy earlier in the day before the Prime Minister's U-turn. The Chancellor certainly was not there. They're talking about tensions and pressures between numbers 10 and 11. You're a calm head. What's the reality as you see it, Gitto?
Well, you know, I would not like to be on Team Rachel Reeves at the moment. You know, at one level, I admire what she's done on saving money. I think she's taken terrible decisions in terms of punishing small business and trashing the economy. But this kind of suggests one way or the other, at some point, she's toast.
Always enjoy speaking to you. Gitto Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications, thanks for your input. Now, at the very heart of this, of course, is the people who need this. Now, it's not clear whether they'll come into effect this October. We hear it will be announced at the next fiscal event. Number 10, even after the Prime Minister spoke, refusing to confirm or deny exactly when that might be. Now, what we do know is some 10 million people lost that £300 payment last year with the scrapping. What we don't know is how many will get it back. So let's bring in Morgan Vine. Morgan is Director of Policy and Influencing at Independent Age. That's a charity helping people in poverty in later life, and joins me now. Your reaction to the decision yesterday, and how desperate will people perhaps need this cash? Good morning to you.
Good morning. We were pleased to see that the government has listened and that they do intend to change the threshold. But obviously, there's a lot of questions. Where's that threshold going to be set? Who's going to receive it? And also, are they going to receive it this winter? Because we already know that the people calling our charity have been having a really difficult time during those colder months. Many not turning the heating on, cutting back on food, cutting back on warm water. So we need to know. They need security and they need to know when this money is going to come.
Morgan, where do you think it should go? You'll be aware the threshold was 11,800 for an individual, £18,023 for pensioner couples. Where should those figures actually be, in, as you would see it?
Well, we think there's different ways the government could do it. So one thing that they could do quite quickly is to expand the eligibility. So, for example, at the moment, winter fuel payment is only linked to pension credit, but there are other social security payments that are for people on low income. So, for example, housing benefit. There's also payments for people who have long-term conditions and disabilities who might need the heating on more. So a quick thing they could do is to expand it to that group. But the group that we're really worried about are the people who currently don't receive anything. They just miss out on all of that money. There's about a million of people in that situation in later life, and we think the government needs to set a threshold that will capture those people. So it needs to be higher than where it is now, but we'd like the government to look at it and work out how many people will be helped depending on where the threshold is set.
Morgan, you and your colleagues at Independent Age work with these folk every single day of your life. A political question, if I can. Do you think that's what we saw with the local elections in around a quarter of England and indeed some mayoralty elections, that the kickback against Labour, was this one of the key, if not the key, event that fuelled it?
We're certainly hearing from people across generations who are really, really concerned about older people living in poverty. And I think they're concerned about people of all ages living in poverty, including older people. It's not old versus young. We know that there are older people having a really tough time, and lots of people have been calling us, asking what they can do to help, how they can support that group. So it's definitely something that people across generations really care about. And I think the government's got an opportunity now to put right what they did last year.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Morgan Vine, your Director of Policy and Influencing at the charity Independent Age. And now over to you. Sometimes a U-turn is a position of strength. I know I'm going down the wrong road. I know I've taken the policy, but this one, he's been dragged kicking and screaming into this decision. So does he emerge stronger or weaker? And to use Guiteau's words now, presumably the hostages can be taken and he'll yield again. And now, is there actually trouble at the top between the Prime Minister and Chancellor? For the love of all that's holy, they've only been in 10 months. It took the Conservatives years to get to this pitiful low. Elsewhere, to Washington, gunned down for being Jewish. Yechiel Leiter is Israeli ambassador to the U.S.
The couple that was gunned down tonight in the name of Free Palestine. It's a young couple about to be engaged.
And we'll have more on that. 7:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A man and woman who worked for the Israeli embassy in Washington have been shot dead outside a Jewish museum. Violent criminals and sexual offenders could be released earlier as part of planned prison reforms in England and Wales. And the Prime Minister is due to sign off on the Chagos Islands deal later, handing them over to Mauritius. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving across England and Wales, largely dry and bright elsewhere. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of at least 45 minutes on the M1 southbound to Junction 10 at Luton Airport because a lorry is on fire. Two lanes are closed. There are huge delays from Junction 12 at Flitwick. Surrounding routes, especially the A5, are extremely busy. Elsewhere on the motorways, the M25 very slow anti-clockwise to Junction 9 at Leatherhead. It's following an accident. The delay starts around 2 miles before Junction 10 at the A3. And the A2's very slow westbound up to the Danson interchange, and that's all down to an accident. Those delays start from before the M25 junction. On the underground, there are severe delays on the District and Hammersmith and City lines, and also there are still minor delays on the Bakerloo.
LBC.
Ready, steady, go! The Cribbit range is in Lidl stores now. And with Lidl Plus, you can grab a running backpack for just £11.99 and save £30 on a four-person blackout tent for only £99. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. While stocks last, GB only, 18+, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
When it comes to the beautiful game, Barclays is here for it all. From packed stadiums, top-of-your-lungs singing and last-minute winners.
To muddy grassroots pitches, half-time oranges and mum and dad stood on the sidelines. For 25 years, Barclays has invested millions into community sports. Because there is no football without grassroots football. Search Barclays Football to find out more.
Ready? Steady! The Toyota-thon sale event is on!
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry! Deals must end 31st of May. The Toyota-thon sale event is on! Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
Hey, it's me, the washing machine. Look, sorry about the noise last night. I'll try and keep a lid on the old drum and bass, yeah? Cheers! I've used a bit more energy than usual, but your hoodie smells like clouds, so...
Heads up! I'm going to be buzzing for the next hour!
Need to conquer the power hungry? With OVO, you can choose 2 hours of free electricity a week. OVO. Do energy differently. Beyond customers only. Smart meter required. Payable as energy credit. Consumption limit of 1 kilowatt per hour. 3 hours ends August 31st. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. Daniel, you'll give us the first assessment. If you've got something wrong, it's probably a good idea to admit it and to put it right. But it has taken 10 months, and how many assurances have we been given from the Prime Minister and the Chancellor on down? that there would be no turn on winter fuel payment. The story is unsurprising, the front page of some, not all of the newspapers. Bear in mind, the papers went to bed, as they call it, before this horrific shooting in Washington. And indeed, we're going to be speaking with Guardian journalist David Smith in Washington in a few minutes' time. Let me tell you the front pages. For the Daily Express, fight for fuel, pay for all, not over. I don't know that they'll give it for all. And in reality, the idea, and I always use this, and it's no, honestly, I'm not meaning to be offensive to Lord Sugar, but he doesn't need a winter fuel allowance, does he? Let's be candid about it. Sir Alex Ferguson doesn't need a winter fuel allowance. So it's how expensive it is to put that sort of means testing in place. Reeves reeling from triple blow, the Daily Mail front page. They also talk about the winter fuel, the inflation, and the tax pressures on the Chancellor. The Guardian spells it out. Starmer announces U-turn over winter fuel after fierce backlash. I think that's probably calls it about right, don't you? And the Times has the aspect that we looked at just there with our guest. Pensioners to wait year after winter fuel U-turn. So even after the Prime Minister spoke yesterday in the House of Commons, in the afternoon, Number 10's team were unable to confirm whether it will be in place for this winter, when the fiscal event will be. That will have the great unveiling. One other front page, just taken almost, the first one that I come to. Oh, OK, well, that's a pretty punchy one, I suppose. The Sun says, Justice Secretary has vowed paedophiles to be castrated. This is chemical castration. Now, this is inspired, of course, by the sentencing review by the former Conservative politician, senior Conservative politician, indeed, David Gawke, who was commissioned by the Labour government. Mr Gawke is here taking your calls in the last half hour of the show, so we'll learn a lot more about that. There will be various press conferences. We'll talk about it on the LBC. You'll hear about it on the LBC News Bulletin. I'll talk about it with LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, and then you can ask your questions. Quickly to the websites, the LBC app giving you more details, and I say we're going to speak with a journalist in Washington in just a moment on this horrific story in Washington. Two Israeli embassy staff members shot dead in what they're calling a targeted attack. We're going to be looking at the next hour in this frightening wave of what appear to be anti-Semitism, and the Independence website actually takes us to Washington as well with the rather extraordinary ambush by President Trump of his counterpart in South Africa with accusations over white genocide. Again, we're going to be giving you more on that later in the show. Daniel in Golders Green, does this affect you? I'm sorry, I have no idea of your age, so does it affect you or someone you know or love the winter fuel payments? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, thanks for aging me there.
No, I said I don't know how old you are. I said, does it affect... Hang on a minute. I said, does it affect you? I don't know how old you are. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah, Nick, it doesn't affect me, but it does affect my parents. Nick, my mum and dad are pensioners.
Right.
They've worked and paid taxes for a combined 100 years, and they lost their winter fuel allowance last winter. And frankly, Nick, it's become obvious that Starmer's humiliating partial U-turn on the winter fuel allowance has come about because he's been bounced into it by the drubbing that they received at the local elections. And he's not actually doing it because he genuinely believes it's the right thing to do.
Respond to this that's come in as we're speaking from Ashley. This is a group of people who've been cosseted for years. Pensioners are the richest group of people in this country, and now the government has turned over and allowed them to get away with it. I don't know if that's quite fair, but anyway, allowed the campaign to get away with it. A response from you, Daniel.
Absolutely despicable, Nick, and it's typical, unfortunately, of the attitude of some people in this country. Pensioners have worked for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and paid taxes and done the right thing. They're decent people who paid into the system and they've been punished and they shouldn't have their winter fuel allowance taken away. Because this argument, frankly, Nick, that people use, oh, well, some people don't need it. Well, sorry, to countries like Malaysia, who has a sovereign wealth fund worth $27 billion, do they need $11.6 billion of our overseas climate aid? Does Pakistan need millions of pounds of our overseas climate aid when they have a nuclear weapons program?
Lastly, it's going to leave the Treasury some billion pound light. We don't know yet because we don't know how many people are going to have it restored from, I think, the 10 million it was who lost it. I'll check that number. But they have to find the cash somewhere. I don't know whether you have savings. I don't know whether you have ISAs. I don't know what sort of thing you are. Are you ready to pay a bit more tax?
No, absolutely not, Nick.
Well, where are they going to get the cash from, sir?
I'll tell you where. Us taxpayers, Nick. Right. The Treasury last year collected £857 billion in tax from us, and then the government borrowed a further £152 billion. That's £1 trillion in spending. Now, Nick, you're telling me that if you went into the Treasury with your team, if you and Henry Reilly went into the Treasury, you're telling me that you couldn't find savings of £1 trillion in order to keep just £1.4 billion?
once we'd sobered Henry up, though, would be a possibility, I imagine. Daniel, best wishes to your parents. Thank you. Tricia in Edinburgh says, revising winter fuel payment eligibility is right, and it makes the PM stronger. I'm 71, says Tricia. I agree with stopping universal winter fuel payment. We need a robust system that can be adapted to a variety of situations to ensure those of any age who need financial help get it. A working person on low income should not pay a winter fuel allowance to me. More on that in a moment. Now we go to Washington. Two staff members working for the Israeli embassy have been shot dead close to what I understand is the Capitol Jewish Museum. Pamela A. Smith, chief of the police at the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, said this at a press conference.
We believe the shooting was committed by a single suspect who is now in custody. Prior to the shooting, the suspect was observed pacing back and forth outside of the museum. He approached a group of four people, produced a handgun, and opened fire, striking both of our decedents. After the shooting, the suspect then entered the museum and was detained by event security. Once in handcuffs, the suspect identified where he discarded the weapon, and that weapon has been recovered, and he implied that he committed the offense. The suspect chanted, "Free, free Palestine," while in custody.
Let's get to David Smith, who's Washington Bureau Chief for The Guardian, joining me now. David, what time locally did this happen? What more do we know about the victims and the alleged gunman? Morning.
Hi. Yeah, this was about 9 p.m. local time in Washington, and from that press conference, we know from the police that this individual was seen pacing outside this museum for a time, and then approached four individuals using a handgun, opened fire, killed this young man and woman. And we've learned from Israeli officials that they were actually a couple who were about to get engaged. An engagement ring had been bought. It's obviously a tragic element of the story. And as you heard then, this individual went into the museum and was detained by security, heard chanting, "Free, free Palestine." He has been named as Elias Rodriguez of Chicago, Illinois, aged 30, and this investigation continues.
Do we know anything more about the alleged gunman, David?
No, that's all the detail.
What about the... So the alleged victims were a couple. Was there an event going on? Or were they just visiting the museum? What do we know about that?
Yeah, the Capitol Jewish Museum is a relatively new one in Washington, and actually I was there myself at a similar event only about a week ago. On this occasion, it was the annual Young Diplomats reception, which brings together Jewish young professionals. I believe this couple were actually leaving the event for the evening when this tragedy happened, and obviously a very grim moment.
Lastly, as and when you wake up in the morning, presumably increased security around the Israeli embassy, increased security around the whole of the capital, I imagine.
Yes, I think that will certainly be the case. Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, was very quickly on the scene with this. This museum is actually quite near an FBI field office. Donald Trump has also been commenting on social media, saying these horrible DC killings, based obviously on anti-Semitism, must end now. And other politicians weighing in also. Certainly, I think it's going to lead to some heightened security and tension.
David, I'll let you get on with your reporting. Thank you. David Smith is the Washington Bureau Chief for The Guardian. Read all about it from him on that. Right, we've got about a minute, a little over actually, where we can get some of the social media and the texts that are coming in. Charlie Stone in Bury, I don't know why these pundits come on and say pensions have done well or actually understand anything. They have not. If you reach pensionable age before 2016, the maximum you get is £173 a week. And after 2016, it's £230. In other words, the older, more vulnerable people will not get the increase. This comes in from... Do remember to give your name. You've forgotten to do that. This comes in from Richard in Hampstead. If Starmer and Reeves think for one second they'll be forgiven for scrapping pensions winter fuel payments in the first place, they're deluded and living in Fantasy Island. Same subject. This comes in from Sarah in Stoke. You cannot allow this perpetual lie about the £22 billion back hole to keep being repeated. Well, I did say that it is challenged by the Conservatives. There's no evidence of it. Starmer promised he would give a full breakdown of it at the last budget and never has. Mark's in Chatham Hill. Where's Chatham? Is that in Chatham, Mark? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, Sushi Mark from Chatham Hill.
Hello, mate. I don't know why we've talked to you at Chatham Hill. Right, what are you going to tell me?
This is the conversation we're having at work, Nick.
Go on.
It's all about votes. It's votes. That's it. As you just...
Let's try one last time. From you said it's all about votes, and then I think you put your head in a biscuit tin. Let's try again.
Yep, it's all about votes.
Yep.
But they're unpopular within a year. It took the Tories a long time to get there, as you rightly said.
Yep.
And they realise that, to quote a couple of phrases, it's squeaky bum time. If they don't butt their ideas up, they'll be out. There'll be a one-term government and they'll be out. Or as Mickey Flanagan said, out, out.
Safe driving in Chatham. Enjoy the sushi. Mark, thank you. Darren says, pensioners may rejoice, but I don't think working-age people support this U-turn. There's only been a lot of noise about this because pensioners have a lot of time on their hands. Well, I don't know about that, Darren. What about all the Labour MPs who supported them? Working-age people are subjected to means-tested benefits. What people want to see is fairness and equity across the tax and benefit system. We will stay with this story. We're going to be giving you more on that horrific shooting of two members of the Israeli embassy staff in Washington. But immediately after the news...
This time yesterday, investors in the city were banking on two further interest rate cuts this year. Today, they're anticipating just one more reduction in interest rates. Why? And why does it matter? I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this and more with Nick shortly.
7.30 now. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Two Israeli embassy staff have been shot and killed outside a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. The man and woman, a young couple, were killed in the apparent targeted attack at about 9 p.m. local time. More criminals will serve sentences in the community under plans to end prison overcrowding in England and Wales. The former Justice Secretary, David Gawk, has put forward a series of suggestions as part of an independent review. Latest figures show the Chancellor had to borrow more money than expected last month. Borrowing rose to £20.2 billion in April, surpassing analyst predictions of £17.6 billion. LBC weather. Cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, but largely dry and bright. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shotterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician, and to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7.33, back to your views on that winter fuel allowance, the screeching U-turn as I described it. And just to remind you, this sentencing review, you're going to hear a lot more through the course of the morning, but uniquely here and exclusively to LBC, the last half hour that I'm on air, you can put your questions directly to the man who has put the report out, former Conservative Justice Minister David Gawk, here taking your calls. That's from 9.30. 7.33 now. Into the world of business. Christine May is Editor-in-Chief at City AM, and City AM, like many other newspapers this morning, has a picture of the Chancellor on its front page. But let's hear exactly what the copy is, the story is behind that. Christian, why have you got her on the splash? Morning.
Well, good morning to you. Rachel Reeves is going to be in the news throughout the day. Regarding our front page, there's a particular story we picked up on yesterday. Following Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister's secret memo that the Telegraph revealed, in which she suggested to the Chancellor a whole load of taxes that could rise. One of those was the additional rate of corporation tax paid by banks in this country. That additional rate was imposed by George Osborne back in 2015. It has come down a bit from the 8% down to about 3% on top of normal corporation tax for the bank sector. Angela Rayner says it should go back up another 5%, and the banking sector have told us that this would be a big mistake. that the overall tax rate for banks in the UK is already higher than many European countries, certainly higher than New York, and that we would lose our competitive advantage if any move were made to increase taxation on the banking sector. Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? But I do think they've got a point. Fortunately for now, the Chancellor seems inclined to ignore Ms Rayner's helpful advice. But given the state of public finances, which I suspect we're about to talk about, she may come back and look at it with fresh eyes.
So the Chancellor might ignore that. What about the Bank of England and their Monetary Policy Committee when it comes to decisions about interest rates, Christian?
Well, because of the spike in inflation yesterday, investors in the city who place quite substantial bets and try and figure out the trajectory of interest rate cuts have moved from a position this time yesterday where everybody was anticipating that the Bank of England will make two further reductions in rates across the course of this year. There is now a move towards the idea that they will probably only make one. Now, that's not nailed on, and the bank, of course, will be making its own decisions on that. But there is now a suggestion that perhaps because inflation is high and is set to remain quite high, and this would be in accordance with the chief economist at the Bank of England's own personal views, that the bank has been cutting rates a little bit too quickly, given the state of inflation, that we may now only see one further reduction in interest rates this year. What does this mean? Well, we have seen a bit of a trajectory among mortgage lenders anticipating a gradual decline in interest rates and adjusting their rates accordingly. They may now temper that and be on a bit more of a watch and wait brief to see quite how the trajectory for interest rates plays out.
Let's go to online shopping. I had terrible trouble finding my fiancé's trousers. This is because she'd ordered them from Marks and Spencer's and they just seemed to go on a tour, most of London, finally turning up in the right place. But have we sorted out the problems with M&S? Christian?
Well, in the immediate term, no. Indeed, many people...
She got lucky then.
Many people last night and early this morning would have discovered that the entire M&S website was, in fact, offline. A simple message saying it was undergoing maintenance. So I understand it is now back online, but not to take online orders as of yet. This problem is still set to bedevil M&S through to probably July. And yesterday, the company produced their results for the previous year, a period that ran up to just before the cyber attack. Those results were incredibly strong. There was a little bit of a share price recovery for M&S yesterday off the back of those very strong results. But as investors digested the news that this problem is going to last another month or two and that ultimately it's going to cost them at least a few hundred million quid, the share price began to slide again.
Very disappointing for Stuart Machin and his team here, Christian, because I think probably the men and women in the city would credit them with doing quite a turnaround there. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Were it not for this cyber attack, M&S would currently be probably pole position, number one spot of one of the best performing businesses in the country, certainly in the market. They've done an extraordinary job over recent years, and in particular, you know, culminating in the full year to the end of just before the cyber attack, where their profits, I think, were up to about 880 million. A significant boost. They have increased the dividend. Analysts still have great confidence in the fundamentals of this business, but they do need to get over this cyber attack.
Lastly, into the banking sector. Which bank is telling staff if they want their bonus, they better get into the office?
Well, at the moment, that would be HSBC, and they're not alone in this. Most big employers have settled on their sort of work-from-home policy, and many of them are saying, listen, it's 3 days a week in the office, so that's that. Quite a few people are now pushing that, maybe doing two and a half even. HSBC have said, look, if you don't hit those 3 days minimum, we're going to start taking that into account when we consider your bonuses and your variable pay. And they hope that might focus minds. Other banks like JP Morgan and others have said, listen, it's actually 5 days. That's the job. If you don't like it, you can go. Others are still playing around with different formats. But I think there is now a little bit more stick to go alongside the carrot when big employers are trying to make sure that people turn up to work.
Thanks for all your fiscal input. Christian May is always at work. He's editor-in-chief at City AM. And the time is 7:38. Let's talk winter fuel allowance. Let's talk this decision for the U-turn. My goodness, it had to be dragged out of them, didn't it? Derek's in Christchurch. Your reaction to the news yesterday, Derek. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Nice to talk to you.
Yes.
It's just the fact that I think the Tories let the power companies go, put the prices up like it was going out of fashion.
Do you want the government setting prices?
Well, no, but I mean, surely they can see that the prices that they put the power up, it was absolutely ridiculous. Surely something could have been done about that. I don't know how they could have done it, but that would have been a damn sight better than just just letting them
I hear what you're saying, and it's very good spirited of you to talk about the issues that it's created for poorer people, but I think all the power companies would have said, well, hang on, you're not taking into account Ukraine. That's thrown all our pricing structures out the window. We're in difficult times, that's why we've got to charge more. I'm not saying they're right, but that is what they would have said, Derek.
Yeah. Well, Spain, I used to live in Spain. And,
right.
And I've got friends out there, and their power hasn't gone up, the price hasn't gone up to the amount that ours have. So what's caused that?
I'm afraid I don't know. I'm not familiar with the Spanish power or energy system. Derek, thank you for your input. Just coming on 7:40. Let's do a couple more of the ones. Many, many messages are coming in on social media here. Scott says, pensioners are those who enjoyed free university education, affordable housing. Don't know about that. Interest rates times touching 14%. Good jobs. Well, how do you know, Scott? Untold growth of their assets, which are now worth millions of pounds. Scott, I don't know where you live, but I don't think every pensioner's like this. And I'm supposed to be happy with the fact the government is giving them all free money. OK, just remind you, currently, you're only going to get the winter fuel allowance if you have an income threshold of £11,800 and you're a solid single person, or £18,023. Scott, is that the stuff of millionaires? Dominic in Reading, we don't need a fuel allowance, we need a decent pension. Could you live on the basic state pension, even if you own your own home? Your council tax can take 50% of your pension, and that cannot be right. We'll come back to more of that in a moment. Now, as I mentioned when we went through the review of the newspapers, the front page of one of them, The Sun, says that sexual offenders could face chemical castration. Thousands of offenders could be released after serving a third of their jail time. And this under plans in this long-awaited sentencing review, led by the former Justice Secretary, Conservative David Gort, commissioned by this government amid an overcrowding and crisis in jails in England and Wales. Here with all the details, and I remind you, Mr. Gork is with us later in the show to take your calls. But now to LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I know it's only 7:41, and talk of chemical castration of sex offenders is maybe not the topic over cornflakes that we usually discuss at this time of day. But yes, that is exactly what the government want us to be thinking about today. And it's part of this recommendation, which would extend a trial going on in prisons right now to give prisoners drugs to suppress their libidos in the hope that they won't commit further attacks. The Ministry of Justice says this is already used in other countries around the world. They pointed to Scandi countries, Poland and America, and their review should continue to explore how it can be used for sex offenders to reduce their risk to the public. And earlier this year, David Gork, as you mentioned, speaking to you in around an hour's time, told my LBC colleague Fraser Knight that drug treatments like this could be effective in helping reduce crime.
There's no doubt that drug treatment requirements are pretty effective in terms of getting people off drugs. You know, there is evidence that treatment is the way to deal with this. And, you know, I think we've got to be pragmatic here, ask ourselves the question, you know, I want there to be less crime, I want there to be fewer victims. What is the best way in which we can use our resources to stop people offending? And very often addressing the causes of the crime will be effective. That's not soft justice, that's effective justice.
And Nick, at the moment, just a handful of people in Britain's jails are on these trials. There's two types of drugs involved. SSRIs, which is a type of antidepressant medication that increases the levels of serotonin in the brain, and antiandrogens, which is a class of drug that prevents testosterone from having an effect on the body. So this review says that they want to see if drugs can help with drug and alcohol dependency too. That was what David Gork was referring to in that clip you just heard. Now, it will be voluntary for now, but as you have been talking about this morning, that report in The Sun today says they want to look at whether to take it and make it mandatory, forcing sexual offenders to take these drugs. Government sources told The Sun Shabana isn't squeamish, Shabana Mimi, the Justice Secretary, about doing what it takes to protect the public. As always, she will grab this problem by the proverbials. So some studies have shown that using these drugs to dull sex urges can slash offending by up to 60%.
How much detail have we got? Because would we have to take it on trust that these men took these drugs, or would they actually be administered by a health worker or in a clinic or something?
Yes, so,
or we don't know yet.
So at the moment it's done via the NHS, but through prisons. So it is people that are currently in prisons that are doing these trials, but it is through an NHS and it's through a voluntary programme. So they have to say, actually, yes, I would like and I would give you the consent to give you these drugs. They do take it, but yes.
So let's say you need it every month. I don't know. We don't know that he's actually going to turn up every month. There's a sort of enforcement issue, is there?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely not. And at the moment, like I say, because it's such a small amount of people that are currently taking it, because it is something that requires the consent of the prisoner, of the offender to take it, we don't know. But like I say, these studies that have been done in other countries around the world, very, very positive about the effects that it can have. I think a lot of people will be quite interested in this idea and whether it could work for us. And of course, this is part of those wider efforts to cut reoffending, to ease the strain on packed prisons, which we'll be speaking about with the Tory ex-minister David Gawk today. He's published his big sentencing review, a number of things in it, which I'm sure you'll get into him with him later today. He's backing the increased use of suspended sentences, trying to deport more foreign criminals. He also recommends extending the maximum suspended sentences from 2 to 3 years. The government say they will accept the majority of these recommendations today. And of course, you'll be taking calls from him later today at 9:30.
That's the key. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. As Natasha says there, this is your, obviously I'll ask a couple of questions, but this is your opportunity. And we'll give you a lot more in the news bulletins, by the way, that you can actually put your questions directly to the man at the heart of this review. Nikki, I want to hear what you say about the winter fuel allowance. Is that a positive move or negative as you see it? That's if you can hold on the other side of the news. And also, the other side of the news, another ambush in the White House. President Trump played footage which he claims shows allegations of genocide against white farmers in South Africa to the country's leader, his fellow president Cyril Ramaphosa.
Excuse me, turn the lights down and just put this on. It's right behind you. Those people were all killed.
I'd like to know where that is, because this I've never seen.
Diplomatic incident. We'll have more on that after the 7:45 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
A man and woman who worked for the Israeli embassy in Washington have been shot dead near a Jewish museum. An independent review's recommended a series of measures to end overcrowding in England and Wales prisons. And the Prime Minister is set to sign the controversial deal to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. LBC weather, cloud and rain across parts of England and Wales, but dry and bright elsewhere. A high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier. Two lanes stay closed and the delays of around 45 minutes go all the way back to Junction 12 at Flitwick. Also, severe delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 9 at Leatherhead. It's all down to an accident. Two lanes are closed and it's slow back past the M3 at Junction 12. On the M2 westbound, very busy to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne. That's all down to an accident. And long delays on the A2 westbound at the M25 junction heading towards London, and that's after an accident that happened earlier. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the District and Hammersmith and City lines.
This is LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men. In fact, 1 in 8 will be diagnosed, with a higher risk for black men. So, Prostate Cancer UK are asking you to join them at March for Men on Saturday, 14th of June, in London's Battersea Park. Walk with thousands of others towards a better future for men. Bring friends and family, share stories and celebrate your loved ones at this great day out. Search March for Men to sign up. LBC supports this message.
Hey, it's me, the washing machine. Look, sorry about the noise last night. I'll try and keep a lid on the old drum and bass, yeah? Cheers. I've used a bit more energy than usual, but your hoodie smells like cloud, so...
Heads up! I'm going to be buzzing for the next hour!
Need to conquer the power hungry? With OVO, you can choose 2 hours of free electricity a week. OVO. Do energy differently. Beyond customers only. Smart meter required. Payable as energy credit. Consumption limit of 1 kilowatt per hour. 3 hours ends August 31st. T's and C's apply.
Search kayaks for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search kayak for great deals on car hire. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, I mean car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before 8. Now we'll get the latest on that ambush of the South African president from Donald Trump in a moment. But Nick is in Sherborne. Thank you for hanging on the line. As you heard the news of the U-turn from the Prime Minister, your reaction, Nicky? Good morning.
Well, is there an alternative whereby...
Well, yes, they don't U-turn, I suppose, sir, is the alternative, isn't it?
Well, I'm not... Well, mine's a different alternative.
Ah.
There's elderly people who are afraid to turn up the heating, and the winter was quite severe at times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that we get our winter fuel allowance, and also...
Well, you don't anymore, only unless you're in the most need...
Yes. Now, and then there's a £150. I don't know what it's called.
I'm sorry, I'm not in receipt of it, so I don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
And that's paid directly to the companies, rather than
something to help with the energy fuel, the energy bills. I'm sorry, is that what it is?
Yes.
Right.
And rather than like our winter fuel allowance, which we get paid into the bank, our own bank account.
Okay, then clearly you are of an age where you are in receipt of these. When you heard that you were not getting your winter fuel allowance, what did it mean to you?
Well, I've got to put it... Well, when it's severe cold weather like it was last winter...
Yeah.
Well, you were careful.
Well, I want to know, what did you do? Did you not keep the house as warm? Did you wear an extra sweater? Did you... I don't know. Use a hot water bottle. Tell me what it physically meant for you, Nicky.
Well, I had to be careful. Gas cooking as well.
Okay. So then you heard the news you heard yesterday, possibly on LBC. Your reaction to the change?
Well, where's Rachel Reeves going to get the money from?
Well, this is it. Okay. We might pay... I don't know if you're a saver, if you've got ISAs or investment vehicles like that. You might find that those are being taxed, Nicky.
Well, as an alternative... The winter fuel allowance of £300 plus it's £150.
Yes.
And now that's paid directly to the gas electric companies.
Right, okay.
So now, rather than pay me my winter fuel allowance, pay that as well.
Okay, Nicky, it's an idea. Let's see what others make of it. Thank you. The time is 7:52. Let's go elsewhere. We go to the United States. We cross the Atlantic, and it's another ambush in the White House. President Trump this time going after South African President Cyril Ramaphosa with printed copies of articles showing the deaths of white farmers, plus some video too.
Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know. To pick anyone, white South Africans are fleeing because of the violence and racist laws.
President Trump went on to demand an explanation, his words, for what he said was a very sad situation. We have thousands of stories talking about it. We have documentary, we have news stories. It has to be responded to. And then he played that footage after asking for the lights to be dimmed. Response from President Ramaphosa?
People who do get killed, unfortunately, through criminal activity, are not only white people. Majority of them are black people. And we have now been utilized...
The farmers are not black. I don't say that's good or bad, but the farmers are not black.
Prominent South Africans, including Elon Musk, who hasn't been around the White House so much, and the golfer Ernie Els, looked on. Well, let's bring to the conversation Heather Walker, who's a London-based journalist and was editor of the newspaper The South African. First question, as a journalist, you'll be expecting this, Heather. What veracity is there to the claims put forward by the president, as you understand it? Good morning.
Good morning. Now, Trump is not wrong in that there's a high crime rate in South Africa. That's undeniable, and nobody in South Africa is suggesting otherwise. There's a high murder rate. But I think his view on this issue has been skewed by what he's been seeing on social media, which is not really presenting the facts. The facts are that, as Ramaphosa, the president, said, more people proportionally who are dying from murder are actually black people, often poor, and they don't have the same status in South Africa today, even now after democracy, as many white people, particularly farmers in South Africa.
There have been attacks on farmers, though, haven't there, Heather?
Sorry?
There have been attacks, but is it white and black farmers, then?
It is white and black. There's a statistic I found, which is that in the last quarter of 2024, there were about 3,000 murders, and 12 of those, we believe, were farm murders, of which only one was probably a white farmer. The rest were black farm workers. So you can see, in terms of the numbers, that what they're saying doesn't necessarily amount to a genocide. So I do think it does play into Trump's narrative about whites being victims, and sort of it meshes very nicely with a lot of his narratives about MAGA and all that.
What do we know about the producers or the production of the videotape he played in the White House, Heather?
So from what I can tell, it was part of a protest by a group of farmers or of Afrikaners who put up crosses along the roadside to sort of represent the deaths that they perceived as being disproportionate compared with other members of the population. But in terms of it representing actual numbers, it seems very unlikely that those were real crosses of dead people.
All right. This is a big question for you. Why is this sort of crime so high in South Africa?
Well, you just have to look at the economic and the political situation in South Africa. We have a nearly 40% unemployment rate. People are desperate. They're looking for ways to make ends meet, and unfortunately, a lot of them have turned to crime. We also have a huge number of undocumented immigrants, which is putting a lot of pressure on local services. The economy has been really sluggish ever since, I guess, COVID. And the new government who took over last year has really been trying to put measures in place to improve things. And then, of course, on top of that, you've got Trump putting all these tariffs, pulling US aid, which was helping HIV patients. So there's so much pressure on South Africa at the moment that these murders are likely to not be stopping anytime soon, unfortunately.
Lastly, what do you understand the relationship to be between the two men?
I think it's been quite fractious for some time. We know that Trump has... This genocide situation is not new for Trump. He's been actually talking about it since his first term in around 2018. So this has been something that's been on his mind for a very long time. And it's all come to a head with the tariffs. He sort of ejected the South African diplomat in the US. He's now obviously won't back down on anything until what he sees as an issue in South Africa has been solved.
Heather, thanks for all your input on that. Heather Walker is a London-based journalist but was editor of the newspaper The South African. 3 minutes before 8. Let's come back to events here in the UK. The winter fuel allowance U-turn, but many things we don't know, such as when and how. That is, how many of you will be back in receipt of it. Brian's in Rayleigh. Your reaction to what you heard yesterday. Good morning.
Well, I would think the simple answer is to add it to the pension, that the state pension that you already get, and then you would pay tax on it at varying rates. If you're on 50%, 50% of it immediately go back to the government. And on that, the balance, to say the 50%, you pay VAT. There's another 16% of that. So it would be a 34.
But that would, I hear you, but that would mean, of course, the bill would be... I know you're going to tell me that a lot would be reaped back in tax, but it would be enormous because you're giving it to every single pensioner, aren't you?
Well, what are they going to do now? How are they going to work out the means testing?
Know.
I mean, it's the bureaucracy involved in not paying it in a simple way must be more than it would cost to just give it to everybody and have done with it.
Brian, I hear what you say. Thank you. Only finishing to get one more voice on before the news. Ken in Tavistock. Ken, is it the right call, albeit 10 months on?
I think, Nick, that they've got themselves in a hole now, and all the time that they talk about who's going to get it and who's not going to get it, they're never going to get themselves out of the hole, and I think they need to do something different.
Go on.
My wife and I used to get the heating allowance. There's two of us in the same household. We've only got one boiler. We've only got one heating system. Mm-hmm. Why do they not say we're going to introduce the heating allowance for all households that have got an eligible pensioner in it, rather than say, OK, we'll do it for a husband and wife?
How am I going to check there's not a bogus claim? How am I going to check? If I say, unfortunately, she's no longer with me, but how am I going to say, my late mum's with me, she's not, she's living down the road, and I get the money? How would we make sure that didn't happen?
You can never make sure, Nick, but I think most people are fairly honest, and I think it's fairly easy to introduce a system that says, this person is retired, they're living with somebody else who retired, you only pay the payment once.
Ken, thanks for that. It is time to move on. The music means we might return to this, but definitely we're going back to Washington. Two Israeli embassy staff gunned down at a Jewish museum. Their crime would appear, apparently, because they were Jewish. Israeli ambassador to the United States, Yael Leiter, shared a message in support of Jews in America.
Together we won't be afraid. Together we'll stand. And we're going to overcome moral depravity of people who think that they're going to achieve political gains through murder.
To your workplace, and as you listen to the boss, have you ever sighed? Well, that could now go down as workplace harassment. Dear God, I don't think I'd have survived 5 minutes. Plus, the man behind that sentencing review, David Gawk, is here taking the calls, but that's after nine. The 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a suspect has been arrested after two Israeli embassy staff were shot and killed in Washington, D.C. The man and woman, who were a young couple, were killed in the apparent targeted attack at about 9 p.m. local time. Israel's ambassador to the UN has called it a depraved act of anti-Semitic terrorism. Pamela A. Smith is chief of police in the U.S. Capitol.
Once in handcuffs, the suspect identified where he discarded the weapon, and that weapon has been recovered, and he implied that he committed the offense. The suspect chanted, "Free, free Palestine," while in custody.
Serious sex offenders could face chemical castration as part of plans in a review of sentencing policy. More criminals will also be released early or serve their sentences in the community to help ease jail overcrowding in England and Wales. The review was led by the former Justice Secretary, David Gawk, who'll be taking your calls later in the programme. Sir Keir Starmer is due to sign off on the controversial deal to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. The agreement, which will see the UK lease back the Diego Garcia military base, has suffered a series of political setbacks. A virtual signing ceremony is due to take place this morning. The Irish rap group Kneecap say they will vehemently defend themselves from a terror charge. One band member, Liam O'Hanna, is due in court next month, accused of displaying a Hezbollah flag at a gig in North London. Kneecap are due to headline a festival in Brockwell Park in South London tomorrow night. Tottenham fans are celebrating their first trophy in 17 years after beating Manchester United 1-0 in the Europa League final. These supporters were in Bilbao last night and were full of praise for manager Ange Postecoglou.
Unbelievable. Can't believe we won it. Can't believe we won it. Tottenham all the way. Ange always wins in his second season. Come on, the boys!
I was big Ange, and then I was a bit, but he's done it. We've been waiting for years.
He said it, and he did it.
Spurs are expected to hold an open-top bus parade tomorrow afternoon. In the city, the FTSE 100's just reopening at 87.86 after closing up 5 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 18. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, but most places largely dry with bright spells, a high of 21 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
The people of Britain love their fancy blenders. They've bought loads of them. And luckily, if they bought them with Barclaycard, they earned rewards. In fact, they'll earn rewards on all their eligible purchases.
It's a more convenient way to consume your fruit and veg.
What you buy is your business. Giving you rewards on purchases is ours. Barclaycard. Make money work for you. 28.9% APR representative variable subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after eight on Thursday, May the 22nd, the sinister and spread of anti-Semitism across the world. We know about events allegedly taking place around the embassy in London. Now we know that two people have been gunned down again, allegedly, involved in an anti-Semitic attack. We're to Washington there with full details on that horrific story. Meanwhile, back here in the UK in other news.
With more criminals being lined up to serve time in the community instead of behind bars, we reveal how many released inmates are being charged with murder. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight with the details.
And on the same theme, Shadow Justice Secretary Robert Jenry told journalists last week the government needs to make different choices when it comes to releasing inmates from prison early.
Justice Secretary is failing to protect the public. She could have brought forward emergency measures to tackle the 10,000 foreign criminals who are in our prisons. She could have brought forward emergency measures to get our court sitting 7 days a week.
Plus, to the banking sector and the giant banking organisation telling staff, if you want your bonus, you've got to come into the office. So have they been cashing in on working from home?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Back to the story you've heard on LBC News Bulletins, and we have already spoken to someone about this in the first hour of the show. Two staff members working for the Israeli embassy in Washington have been shot dead. This took place last night, local time, around 9 p.m. Near the Capital Jewish Museum, steps away from an FBI office. Let's hear now from the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Yaakov Leiter, telling a press conference in Washington that he, standing metaphorically alongside President Donald Trump and Netanyahu, will stand firm against anti-Semitism.
Together we won't be afraid. Together we'll stand. And we're going to overcome moral depravity of people who think that they're going to achieve political gains through murder. On the way in, Ms. Bondi was kind enough to hand me the phone. On the other line was the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who told me that his administration is going to do everything it can possibly do to fight and end anti-Semitism and the hatred that's being directed, the demonization and delegitimization of the State of Israel.
Let's go first to Claudette Mendoza, who's Chief Executive of the Jewish Leadership Council. And there will be many people listening to this who are Jewish or have friends who are Jewish. How concerned should they be for them in the United Kingdom, would you say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, we've all woken up to the news to see this horrific incident, and we're still piecing together the information. But first of all, I'd just like to say that my thoughts go to the families of the victims, because this is truly horrific. I think the reason that this will resonate for Jews in this country is that there have been a spate of incidents recently. You referred to the attack at the Israeli embassy just a couple of weeks ago. There have been some Iranian nationals here who have targeted Jews and Israelis in this country. And there's just a febrile atmosphere where we feel that Jews are being targeted in their places of worship, in their communal buildings, with people shouting things like just, "Free Palestine."
Indeed, just to remind, if I can interrupt, the Israeli embassy, that was an alleged terror attack, the arrest of 5 Iranian men. We have to tread carefully here, Claudia, I'm sure you're aware. This followed raids at locations across England. So if we can move on to that, where we find ourselves now. Claudia, what's fueling this globally?
So I think globally, Jews are feeling extremely vulnerable. Anti-Semitism is at an all-time high and has not abated since October.
And I think we've lost you. Can you hear me? UK. Sorry, it's at an all-time high, and then the line dropped out, Claudia, if you could continue.
Oh, sorry.
That's right. No, I don't think we're going to manage to get through that. Claudia, let's try and get you, if we can, on what's called a telephone line. They work sometimes. 8 minutes after eight, Arthur Snell was a British diplomat, is an international security expert. You can find him on the Behind the Lines podcast. OK, what do governments, central governments, local governments, embassies, what do they need to take from last night's events? Good morning.
Morning. I think one thing we've got to recognise is that, particularly in the US, you're in a society where people have easy access to guns. Tragically, murders involving handguns are not as uncommon as they are in some other places. It's not completely clear to me whether or not these people were targeted because they were diplomats or because very obviously they're Jewish and they attended a Jewish event.
Well, they're from the Israeli embassy and they're at a Jewish museum. I think we can probably join the dots there, can't we, Mr. Snell?
Well, we can join the dots that they're definitely Jewish people at a Jewish event. But did the assailant know that they were diplomats?
Well, he's reported to have said free Palestine.
Yeah,
as absolutely. He was detained. So I think we've got an idea to his potential motives here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an anti-Semitic attack against people attending an event at a Jewish museum. What I'm saying is it's not clear that it's linked to their role in the embassy. We don't know that. I don't think we can speculate about that.
So coming back to security for Jewish people, whether it's in the United Kingdom, whether it's in the United States, where it's anywhere, what do the relevant authorities need to do?
Well, in general, there are extremely high tensions, and that is, as your previous caller was just saying, has had the emanation of a very, very high level of anti-Semitic fervour. And in any place, the public authorities have a responsibility to maintain safety and security. But in certain environments, for example, in a country where people have easy access to weapons, that there is always a risk to people. And, you know, it's one of the tragedies of the modern era that America doesn't have a way of getting on top of gun violence.
Arthur Snell, thank you. You were a British diplomat and international security expert. You're on the Behind the Lines podcast. Let's get Claudia Mendoza. Mendoza is Chief Executive of the Jewish Leadership Council, back on the line. And you may be aware that I'm privileged to serve on the board of the CST, the Community Security Trust. And this follows a pattern, doesn't it, Claudia, that when the tensions get inflamed in the Middle East, often you see attacks like this in countries such as the UK and elsewhere in the West.
Yes, that's correct. I think we are well used to the idea that conflict in the Middle East does produce a spike in anti-Semitism in diaspora countries, not least the UK, which is one of the reasons that we say it's really important that language and rhetoric around the conflict is not imported in a toxic way into countries like the UK, because the Jewish community does become a target. I just want to say that the event that took place was an event hosted by the American Jewish Committee, not an Israeli organization. Mm-hmm. Organizations that we have, similar organizations here, we are partners with the AJC, and that would have been filled with Jewish people. The reports at the moment are saying that the shooter went in and was indiscriminately targeting people. Obviously, we have to wait for that to be verified, but people will be hearing that and thinking that that could have been them at a Jewish community party and be targeted with someone shouting Free Palestine.
How safe is it to be Jewish in the UK at the moment?
We are blessed in that we have an amazing organization in the CST, as you mentioned. The police and the security forces here have also managed to stop many attacks against the community and wider society. And we've been really, really fortunate in that we haven't seen a violent attack of this nature. But we're really cognizant of the fact that that doesn't mean that we are immune from this sort of incident. And this is what fills us with anxiety.
Lastly, this event, of course, took place in the United States, but here in the United Kingdom, I think you'd probably agree, the British government went as far as it has in living memory in condemning the activities of the Israeli government and the IDF and using some fairly punchy language. How much does that concern you?
The government, this government, the previous government, have been really robust in their condemnation of the attacks that took place on October the 7th and in support of the defence of the Jewish community here against anti-Semitism and making sure that we have the security that we need at buildings. But we have seen an increase in the rhetoric, not necessarily from the government, but from, you know, elected officials, from local councillors about the situation. And we feel that that increase in rhetoric that really, really heightens the temperature and imports a conflict that doesn't belong here in the UK and does heighten tensions and does threaten the community.
Thanks for taking the call on the landline. Claudia Mendoza, your Chief Executive of the Jewish Leadership Council, 13 minutes after 8 is the time. Let's get some of the texts and social media that's coming. I haven't done enough of this. Jen in Romford: the government in this country has allowed anti-Semitism to be ramped up. They need to come down hard on anyone blaming the innocent Jewish people here. Of course, this attack, I just stress, is in Washington, over in the United States of America. But I am asking, if you are Jewish or you have friends, loved ones who are Jewish, how safe do you think they're feeling here? Anna Marie: this was an atrocious act and absolutely wrong, but I'm not sure it's anti-Semitic. Well, I think if we know that these people are attending a Jewish museum for a Jewish event and they've come from the Israeli embassy and the alleged gunman is shouting Free, Free Palestine as he shoots people, I think we'd probably go. Kayla, my thoughts go out to the victims of the genocide in Gaza, where Palestinians are being targeted every day by Israelis. This is hypocrisy. Kayla, and we talked about that yesterday, but just as nothing justifies innocent babies being bombed, nothing justifies two people who work in an embassy who were trying to go to an event at a museum being shot down. Come on, Kayla, just have a think, really. We'll come back to that, specifically the British angle. If you are Jewish in this country and you have been through some pretty tough times, remember when those pro-Palestinian demos were at their height, we'll take your calls on that. But to other matters and to the world of probation. Bex Dudley is a probation officer in Preston. Here she is explaining the challenges facing probation staff with an increase of these shorter prison sentences.
Shorter sentences kind of disrupt people's lives. For example, people might lose housing because they've gone to prison, but then it's not really enough time for us to find more housing for them. The caseloads can be intense, but there's always hope that we'll get more staff.
You're listening to LBC 8:15, news breaking at this time, and literally breaking. The government has been temporarily banned from concluding its negotiations on the Chagos Islands deal by an injunction granted in the early hours of the morning by a High Court judge. You may recall LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, referenced that that was going to be taking place later today. In fact, we might whistle her down from the newsroom to get more from Natasha. The government then banned from concluding negotiations on the Chagos Islands deal, scheduled, of course, for later this morning, a sort of virtual affair, as it was, following an injunction from a High Court judge. We'll get you more on that and, of course, into our conversation about the tensions and dangers facing Jewish people in this country. After the 8:15 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The government's been temporarily banned from signing a deal to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius after an injunction was granted by the High Court. A suspect has been arrested after two Israeli embassy staff were shot and killed in Washington, D.C. Serious sex offenders could face chemical castration as part of plans in a review of sentencing policy. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, but dry and bright for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M1 southbound at Junction 10 at Luton Airport, all the lanes have just reopened, but there are still delays of about an hour back to Junction 12 at Flitwick. On the M25 on the Hertfordshire stretch, there are severe delays anti-clockwise from Junction 21 at the M1 to 19 at Watford, and that's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. Then on the Surrey stretch of the M25, anti-clockwise, there are delays of about an hour going towards Junction 9 at Leatherhead. It was after that accident. Two lanes are closed and it's slow from before the M3. Also, the problems continue on the M2 westbound. There are delays for about half an hour to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne following an accident.
This is LBC.
Last year, Amazon was the world's largest corporate buyer of renewable energy. Meaning more and more of our energy comes from wind farms like this one. What happened to recording at the solar farm? To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC. For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Ready, steady, the Toyotathon sale event is on!
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry, deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on! Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day, and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. Mm. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, well, we'll come to your reactions concerning this horrific shooting in Washington, and also picking up on the confrontation between the presidents of the United States and South Africa. But as if yesterday wasn't an embarrassing enough day for the government with its U-turn on winter fuel, it would appear, as I said just before the news headlines, that the Chagos deal, which was due to be signed later today, giving Mauritius billions of pounds in the deal, a virtual signing ceremony to take place with representatives from the Mauritian government. Whoops, we better push pause on that. Here to explain why, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark returns to the studio. Hotfoot, Natasha, morning again.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the details are a little bit unclear, but what we know so far is that an injunction was granted by the High Court at 2:25 a.m. this morning, which was brought against the Foreign Office ahead of the signing of this Chagos deal, which effectively is going to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. Mr. Justice Goose has said that he has granted...
What a great name! Goose, isn't he?
Exactly.
He's had a gander and he doesn't like it.
He's granted this interim relief to a woman named Beatrice Pompey. She has previously brought...
Is she a Chagosian woman
who has been spearheading a campaign to try to stop this deal. So a last-minute spanner in the works for Keir Starmer, and we're hearing that the Ministry of Defence has urgently called off that press conference, which was scheduled for around 40 minutes' time, where Keir Starmer, I'm sure he was already on the way, to this press conference, where he's expected to virtually link up with the Chagos Islands to formally sign this over. So, yes, he has said that this will now be kicked forward. There's going to be a full hearing this morning at around 10:30, where we will hear the full case laid out in full. But, yeah, absolutely hugely embarrassing for Keir Starmer.
There is no measure for embarrassment, but this is a really, really... Red faces over this, won't there be, Natasha?
Yeah, totally. And look, we only heard about this quite late last night, which shows that the government probably were a little bit itchy feet about trying to get this done. And firstly, before the Commons recess comes in as well. And look, there's a lot of news being piled out today by the government, the sentencing review, immigration figures, lots of stuff going on. So it feels like a good day to potentially sign away the Chagos Islands. And actually, Nick, it's probably going to come with a huge price tag as well, up to £9 billion. At the same time as you're taking, you know, benefits away from people and changing winter fuel allowances, it's not a great look for the government. There was some suspicion that they were going to kick back this until after this the recess break, because they just didn't want to, you know, the Labour MPs to be voting on it at the same time. It's really, really not a good look and hugely embarrassing for Sir Keir Starmer. We'll bring you more breaking news on that as we get it in.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. As Natasha rightly says, it was going to cost the taxpayer, believed, around £9 million and would be the first significant loss of British territory since the independence of Hong Kong in 1997. Critics, led by Conservative and Reform MPs, warned the deal will put the military base at risk because of Mauritius's diplomatic ties with China, Russia and Iran. Shadow Foreign Secretary Dame Priti Patel saying, "We stand on the verge of another day of shame for Britain, a day of betrayal of our national interest by Labour." We might have more on that, but we're discussing in the light of the fatal shooting of two members of the Israeli embassy in the United States, your views here in the UK. Jamie says, "I'm Jewish and British living in London. We are so disappointed in Netanyahu, who's lost so much support. Not Israel, but Netanyahu and his government. However, the language from the UK government has a direct impact on our lives as Jews in the UK. I agree, there needs to be something done to bring Netanyahu to the table, but the approach taken is bringing the conflict here. To be fair, we haven't really been safe in the UK since the 2014 conflict, but it's just getting worse and worse." One last one on this. It comes in from, here we go, Jimmy in Liverpool. "Why can't people separate what they see as the wicked actions of an Israeli prime minister from the day-to-day lives of decent, law-abiding Jewish people? It would be, it would be so important," says Jimmy in Liverpool. Now, another conversation we had, of course, was, and also this comes from Washington, as that sad story does, was the confrontation, the ambushing, as it were, of the South African president by his US counterpart, President Ramaphosa, and President Trump. This comes from Steve. "I'm South African living in London. There have been more than 3,000 murders of white farmers since 1994. many involving torture. During this time, there are over 500,000 murders in total in South Africa. So Trump is wrong about there being a genocide. There is, in fact, a memorial with hundreds of crosses, each representing a white farmer murdered. And this has got you talking. Jane's in Wandsworth. Jane, what can you tell me about this story? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Hi. I wanted to call out because I have a bit of background on this issue. I've got family that live in Zimbabwe, and which you could say is, you know, the issue started there many years ago and then fed into South Africa. And, you know, I guess the point I was hoping to say is that I think it's really important for people to note that land redistribution in Zimbabwe needed to happen. It was important. It was a necessary process.
Why was it necessary? Why did it need to happen?
Because it was, you know, it was inherently unfair that you had, you know, the majority of the country being managed by non-native black Zimbabweans.
Right.
So there did need to be some land redistribution. It ultimately had to happen. But the way it happened was brutal. It was illegal. It was violent. And people were killed. And people lost their livelihoods overnight.
Right.
And the world largely ignored it. You know, nothing was done.
What did you take from the way Donald Trump confronted President Ramaphosa?
I felt it was probably the only way to do it with him, really.
Really?
Because, yeah, I felt like in the beginning when he tried to raise it, you know, Ramaphosa sat there and said, "Don't worry, I've got people here that are going to tell you everything is fine. Mm. You know, we've not got an issue." You know, and he pointed to a number of his delegates. And the only way to confront him was with the truth, and you know, and actually show the evidence that he had, because otherwise it would just be completely smiled over by, you know, Ramaphosa will smile his way through.
And you say he smiles. Lastly, from your knowledge of Zimbabwe, I appreciate we're talking about South Africa. Is he popular at home?
No, he's not. He's not. You know, he's not. And, you know, the DA have kept him in power. He's not. I mean, unfortunately, the government over there is not held accountable like it is over here, sadly, and the people of South Africa suffer and the people of Zimbabwe suffer. And, you know, one thing I'd like to say is that, you know, when, just quickly going back to Zimbabwe, when the land redistribution was done so terribly, it was the Zimbabwean people that suffered. You know, they lost their economy overnight.
All right, Jane, I have to leave it there. Thank you for your input. A lot of people want to have their say on that, and we will come back to it. Thank you, Jane. But a lot of today is around law and sentencing and jails and, of course, how to deal with criminality. Well, an offender under the supervision of the probation service in England and Wales is charged with murder every 6 days, according to figures uncovered by LBC. New data shared exclusively with us shows between January 2020 and April 2024, 244 offenders who were let out from prison on licence went on to be charged with a murder committed after their release. LBC reporter Fraser Knight has the exclusive details. Fraser.
Nick, I just want to start by telling you the story of Nadine Marshall, whose 18-year-old son Connor was murdered in South Wales by a stranger 10 years ago while he was on holiday with his friends.
Just after 7 o'clock in the morning, we had the dreaded knock at the door from two police officers. We needed to get to the local hospital.
Now, Connor's killer was serving his sentence in the community, having been convicted of drug offences and assaulting a police officer. And Nadine says her son was approached from behind in a case of mistaken identity when Connor had split from his group.
They just sort of had a night socialising, and when they got back to the caravan, he just said to his friends, "I'm just going to go out for a quick walk." That was the biggest mistake of his life, because he was then attacked from behind. It was just an absolute living nightmare to read that there were so many failings.
Now, with this sentencing review today, Nick, set to see more offenders serving their time not behind bars, but instead under conditions on our streets, LBC can reveal exclusive figures that show at least one person is being charged with murder every week while they're under the supervision of probation officers. And that's a reality that weighs heavily on those teams who are responsible for their management. Ben Coburn is the national chair of the NAPO Union, which represents probation staff.
probation officers could be supervising anybody up to 30, 40 or even 50 people on order or licence at any one time. Clearly that's way in excess of what's achievable. This constant fear of what is happening with the people who I'm working with, who maybe I can't dedicate the time that I want to dedicate to.
Now, the union has told me that several thousand more staff are needed to meet the demand that they already face before these sentencing reforms even start to be implemented. And we understand that the Justice Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will outline a huge boost to their funding later, another £700 million, as she lays out the government's response to David Gough's review. But Nadine Marshall, who now runs the charity Voice, well, she says she can't help but worry that more horrendous crimes are going to be committed.
That's my biggest fear, that any other single family has to endure the nightmare that we continue to live. It's just another accident waiting to happen, a ticking time bomb, and it scares the living daylights out of me.
Nadine Marshall concluding Fraser Knight's exclusive report for LBC. And just to remind you, on a related theme, of course, former Justice Secretary for the Conservatives, David Gough, who has carried out this sentencing review, which is making headlines actually before it's even published this morning, he's here to take your calls. That's from 9.30. Coming up to 8.30. Coming up later in the show... If you're working for HSBC, you won't get your hands on the money of a bonus unless you actually physically report into the office. We'll look at that in more detail later in the show. It's 8.30 now. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is read by Thomas Watts.
The High Court has granted an injunction to temporarily block the handover of the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. Sir Keir Starmer had been due to sign the controversial deal in a virtual ceremony this morning. An independent review has recommended a series of measures to end overcrowding in England and Wales prisons. It could see more offenders serve community sentences and some violent criminals released early. Two Israeli embassy staff have been shot dead near a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. Police say a 30-year-old suspect who's been arrested shouted "Free Palestine" at the scene of the attack. It happened at about 9 p.m. local time. LBC weather: cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, but mostly dry with bright spells. A high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hays Travel have been helping people find their perfect holiday for over 40 years, and there's a reason their customers keep coming back. They are at the heart of the communities they serve. No hassle, no stress, just expert advice from people who live and breathe travel.
With a huge choice of late deals, handy local flights and free child places, it's time to get your summer holiday sorted at Hays Travel. Visit your local branch today. Or protected.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
8.32 now. If you're fortunate enough to be in a job, or perhaps you were in a job and you've retired, I want to take you to a meeting at your job when perhaps a co-worker, maybe the boss, just a fellow worker, started to come out with a particularly ludicrous idea, whatever it might have been. Let's reopen the district office. Let's do this. Let's hire this person. Let's paint all the company cars yellow, whatever it might have been. And it's a natural reaction, isn't it? I can't remember how many times I've stifled sighs, and I'm damn certain there are many times when I will have sighed sighs. But now there could be actually a form of workplace harassment. Sighing in frustration at a co-worker could be harassment. A gentleman called Robert Watson broke down in tears after his manager made exaggerated exhales, the words of the tribunal, at an employment tribunal. They've now said it ruled the ruling amounts to disability discrimination. Now, Mr. Watson worked for Roke Manor Research. No, me neither. But they're behind Hawkeye. Now, you know that at Wimbledon, don't you? So straight away. Now, he joined the firm a few years ago, August 2020, as a software engineer, but struggled with poor timekeeping, difficulty focusing and distraction. Symptoms later linked to the condition ADHD, which he wasn't diagnosed with until November 2022, so a little over 2 years after he joined. After returning from 4 days off following the diagnosis, Mr. Watson was confronted by a project leader referred to only as DT due to the national security concerns about their defence projects. Something's got to change, he was told, and he burst into tears. The tribunal was then told DT continued to question Mr. Watson's hours, and they were told Mr. Watson alleges over the next few weeks DT made comments which made him feel anxious, questioned his working hours and patterns, and expressed non-verbal frustration he did not see him expressing towards anyone else in the team. Enough from me. Let's go to one of my LBC colleagues. He's on the team sheet, Daniel Barnett. You find him on LBC's Legal Hour, Saturday nights from 9. And in context of this, he's an employment barrister at Outer Temple Chambers. Is this a case that had caught your eye beforehand, Daniel, or did my team put you onto it when they called you? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, it's a really interesting case because on the face of it, it seems to say that employers can't manage. Employers have to tread on eggshells and employers aren't allowed to reprimand or take action if someone's not doing their job very well. But when you delve down into the details, there is a very slightly different story here. Because as you've already mentioned, Mr. Watson was diagnosed with ADHD. He was neurodivergent. And the law essentially says that when somebody is neurodivergent, when they have a disability, to use the legal language, employers aren't allowed to harass them for reasons related to that disability, with very limited exceptions that don't apply here. And the tribunal said that once Mr. Watson's manager knew that he was neurodivergent, and just pausing there, everything that happened before they knew was okay. But once they knew he was neurodivergent, then the things that he was doing, like the exaggerated sighing and eye rolling you've described, something he said to Mr. Watson was, "You're becoming a net detriment to the company." All those sorts of things were unfavourable treatment, were creating a hostile atmosphere for a reason linked to his ADHD. And that's a big no-no. The lesson really for employers is to use neutral language when you know someone is neurodivergent. Say something like, "How did your condition affect your work this week?" And then you can go down a disciplinary or a performance management route, if appropriate, rather than passive-aggressive rolling eyes and muttering comments about being a detriment to the company.
So that's how bosses should behave in this fashion, Daniel. What about an employee or the loved one of an employee, and it is discovered he or she is neurodivergent, has ADHD? What should they then do? Should they make it known to their bosses, and indeed their workmates for that matter? What should happen?
Well, there's just no right answer here, because some employers are rightly
that's
going
why
to
you've
think,
got to love
I don't
lawyers.
Want people... exactly. And that's £500.
Yes, thank you very much. Plus VAT and disbursements.
Plus VAT, yes. Some employers are going to think quite rightly, well, I don't want my colleagues to know about this. They'll treat me differently. I'll be shunned. I won't be taken seriously. And some employers are going to say, well, look, I know I have an issue. I know I have a neurodivergent issue. I need to have adjustments made for me at work. The only way that's going to happen is if I tell my employer and trust that they'll treat me right. The problem is, of course, that some employers don't trust the employers to treat them right, and that's why they keep silent. If the employer doesn't know about a disability, and if the employer doesn't have reason to think the employee is probably disabled, then the law doesn't impose any sanctions on employers who don't make adjustments for those disabilities, because how can they? They don't know.
Lastly, this is a field in which you work every day. How accommodating do you think the average workplace is for people with a neurodivergence?
There's two limbs to this. HR, the board, they say the right things, they try to encourage the right things. On the factory floor, people are people and they don't always follow the policies. In the heat of the moment, under the stress and pressure of the job, they just don't do the right things, and that's where the claims arise. It's managers who don't manage as well as they should.
Daniel Barnard is on the LBC team sheet, the Legal Hour, Saturday nights at 9. Thanks, Daniel. You're also an employment barrister at Outer Temple Chambers. Reactions coming. Now, bear in mind, this man is neurodivergent, has ADHD. George says, what a joke, getting upset over someone sighing when you aren't doing your hours of work. He has a condition, George. Will Stewart, I'm picturing a footballer missing an open goal during a game and the entire crowd groaning. Is that now workplace harassment? Well, if they all they do is groan, they've probably got off quite lightly. But again, they are unlikely to have ADHD. Do you not think... God, this goes even further. Rob, this is pathetic. I've been embarrassed to have this publicly centred on the radio. I started crying because someone sighed at me. Well, again, Rob, I would imagine you're probably not the person. You're not a neurodivergent. This is an extraordinary lack of tolerance here. If the bloke has real issues... Now, as Daniel Barnard explained, if you don't know prior to his employment, then, sadly, what takes place, takes place. There's nothing we can do. We didn't know the bloke had an issue. Nothing we can do. But afterwards, surely you have to show a degree. We might pick up more on that, but it's South Africa that you want to talk about, and President Trump's rather ugly action towards another world leader. When have we heard that before? Volodymyr Zelensky, of course. This time it was the turn of the South African president. And Irene's in Cambridge. Irene, what do you want to say to that? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak on your program. You know, those kind of showdowns like we saw, not obviously that's not, you know, it's not comfortable for people to watch.
No.
It's particularly for us as South Africans as well and living abroad in the UK.
Yes.
But there is something that needs to be said, and that is that there needs to be some pressure put on the South African government. And no pressure had been put on up until this point. And now there's an international spotlight on it. And full marks to Cyril Ramaphosa that he brought with a team that was able to bring a balance to what was being said. But it's not all bad to have this, because the idea that it's all bad to bring out what is happening and that ambushing him. You're not going to tell me that the people who in the room weren't prepared on some level for what came at them.
Do you think they were?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think the fact that Cyril Ramaphosa brought John Steenhuisen with him and other people that he knew, like Ernie Els and Rupert... Anton Rupert, you know, I think
Aren't they just ambassadors, do you not think, for the country and for their sporting prowess? Isn't that what they're doing? I think.
No, I don't think so. I think they were invited because they understood what was going to come. And they're coming at it from two levels. They want guys like Steenhuisen, they know what's going on with the farm murders. They know about it. But they, you know, their hands are tied. If they keep shouting out those things in South Africa and making it look like there's an imbalance to what's happening with black folk in the country, because there's violence on both sides here. The violence is unbelievable.
But why is there? I've never been to South Africa and I've been reading up on it.
You need to go, Nick.
No, I do. Of course, it is a part of the world I need to see. I absolutely agree. But why is there such a level of violence?
I think there is, you know, there's a huge amount of frustration in people. You know, if you sell people the idea that they are going to get rewarded at some point for standing up against what is an oppressive regime, and it doesn't happen timorously or it doesn't happen the way they expect it to happen, you're going to produce anger in them. And there is an underlying anger. But I want to say this as a white South African. I love South Africa and I love the people of South Africa, all of them. They are all interesting and amazing. It's the most
Say everyone's in. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who are boring, just as there are Britons as well. You can't say everyone living in the United Kingdom is interesting, because they're not.
What I'm saying to you is that there is a tremendous amount of goodwill, but you need to run a spotlight on what has been happening with the farm murders.
Okay.
It's real, and it was very, and it is very violent and brutal.
Got to get to the news headlines in a minute. Let me just ask you finally, back in South Africa, how popular is the president or otherwise?
Not at all.
Because? Mm-hmm. Because of the crime or because of what?
Because of corruption, because of lying, because of stealing, because of not addressing the issues that are real. You know, people can only be fooled for so long, Nick. At some point, when there's no food on the table, they begin to realise this is not, this is a lie.
All right. Irene, thanks for all the background of someone who lived there, and obviously you still love your homeland, but welcome to the United Kingdom. Let's come back to events in the United Kingdom and this employment tribunal saying that workers subjected to exaggerated exhales from a boss because it was a form of harassment. This is what you're saying on social media on this. Karen says, the trouble is this just highlights to employers how it's better to avoid employing someone who is neurodivergent. It's less risky to do so. I worry for my new neurodivergent son's future. Well, I tell you what I'm also surprised at is the amount of vitriol directed to this gentleman. Davey, where's your name? Davey, I have every sympathy for the man's divergence, but if he works in a business that is fast-moving and intense, and due to his divergence he can't cope, then it's unfair to the company to have to compensate for a team member to the detriment of their business. You make it, I hear what you say, Davey, and it's very likely that there are certain jobs he possibly wouldn't be able to do, but we don't have detail as to what his performance is like, and I think that's probably quite key as well. All right, it's a big day, talking about an employment tribunal. It's a big day for law and order elsewhere with this sentencing review. Remember, the man behind it is going to be taking your calls in the next hour. But we'll also be looking at the winter fuel. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch challenging Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer yesterday.
I'm going to ask him a simple question. It only requires one word, yes or no. Is he planning to U-turn on winter fuel cuts?
Yeah.
That and, of course, the sentencing review from senior Conservative Robert Jenrick after this. It's 8.45 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The government has been blocked from handing over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius in a ceremony this morning. A review has recommended a series of measures to help end overcrowding in England and Wales prisons. Two Israeli embassy staff have been shot dead in Washington, D.C. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving across England and Wales, but largely dry and bright for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still severe delays on the M1 southbound Junction 10 at Luton Airport after that lorry was on fire earlier. All the lanes have been open for a while, but there are still huge delays from Junction 12 at Flitting and also on the surrounding routes, especially the A5. On the M25, anti-clockwise on the Hertfordshire stretch, there are delays from Junction 22 at London Coney to 19 at Watford, and that was after an accident that happened earlier, so everything's back open. But then on the Surrey stretch of the M25, there are still delays of about an hour going anti-clockwise from Junction 12 at the M3 to 9 at Leatherhead, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. And also on the M2, there are delays of about half an hour westbound to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne following an accident.
This is LBC.
Hey, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Ready, steady, the Toyotathon sale event is on.
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry, deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on. Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
Search Kayak for great deals on flights. Wait, that doesn't say flights.
search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, I mean car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Domestic affairs in a moment with that sentencing review and, of course, the winter fuel payment U-turn. But we're staying with South Africa. Rob is in Cheltenham. Now, you lived there, Rob. How long ago were you there?
I moved back 2015.
2015, OK. What took you there, work?
Well, I was there 10 years.
Yep.
I had a very successful building business. I used to build restaurants for Nando's.
Right.
And then, well, I mean, I had 285 employees.
Oh, wow.
Plus contractors. I had 9 crews working in 7 different countries.
Wow. You were busy.
Now, 15 hours a day on the road, but 5.5 days a week. Perfect. I was making the money, but I just didn't have time to enjoy it.
Right, okay. Well, hopefully then, you can enjoy it now. What can you tell me about the country you worked in so much?
Well, when it comes to farm murders, yes, I've known people who've been killed on the farm. Right. It is a huge problem over there. The government just doesn't do anything about it. They turn a blind eye to it. From a business point of view, if you're white in that country, you're at a serious disadvantage.
Why do you say that?
It's a piece of legislation known as Black Economic Empowerment.
Okay. Tell me what that allows for.
Well, the ANC government brought it in. Mm-hmm. When they came, it was after Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the dude's name that came after.
Was it Jacob Zuma?
No, it was the guy that was in before Jacob Zuma.
All right, I'm sorry, but I don't know. Anyway, don't worry too much. Go on. What did it mean?
Right. Basically, what their intention was is that all property and business in South Africa is 70% black-owned.
Right.
Never mind your skill set, never mind your qualifications. They wanted it 70% black-owned.
Well, this presumably was to try and redress the situation prior to that.
I didn't agree with the situation prior to that. However, it completely ruined the economy.
Right. Well, was the economy healthy prior to that, then?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It was.
Okay. And so what was the result of this?
Well, basically, look, they already had an unemployment problem.
Right. So what did it do to the... I mean, there had been, surely, I don't know, I've never visited, you know more, you've lived there, but there had been years of where black people in South Africa had not had fair treatment, hadn't there?
Do you know something? I would disagree with that.
Oh, come on, every documented piece of evidence would show that, Rob. I'm grateful, thank you to Steve. I think the president you're talking about was Thabo Mbeki, is that right?
Thabo Mbeki, was
him. Well, no, don't thank me. Thank Bruce and others. Thank you very much.
Thabo Mbeki. I couldn't remember his name.
Right.
But yeah, I've had lads working for me. Older lads who worked under apartheid.
Right.
And they said, you know, if you get run over on the road, an ambulance will come and pick you up, you get taken to a decent hospital, that entire country is falling to pieces now.
Right, okay. You see,
and their unemployment figures they talk about, 4% in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably easily quadruple that.
Right.
Okay. In South Africa.
Okay, all right. Why'd you come back?
We came back because of the fact that it is a dangerous country and I had a very young son.
Right.
I did not want my son raised under those conditions.
Right. Any regrets?
Actually none at all, because I got to see some wonderful things over there. It's a lovely country.
All right, but it's just got its challenges. We can probably say that about many places on the planet. Rob, thanks for all the background. Again, if you're motivated by that, I'm the first to say I have not visited South Africa. I have just a working knowledge of it, so I'm being guided by you, and I'll welcome more calls on that. But we must go to events back home 7 minutes before nine, because as is front page of one of the newspapers today, there is this sentencing review, and one that's caught the eye of a lot of the journalists is there could be this idea of chemical castration, but also more prisoners will have the chance to earn their way out of jail. The sentencing review delivered, by a former senior Conservative MP, indeed former Justice Secretary David Gawke, plans for a greater use of community orders, a move away from locking people up for short periods of time. Pregnant women and other vulnerable offenders should be given more deferred or suspended sentences. Well, that's what you're going to hear. But what of the opposition? Conservative MP and Shadow Justice Secretary Robert Jenrick joins me now. Obviously, you're just currently going from most of the headlines. Perhaps you haven't heard in detail from Mr. Gawke, but what you're picking up so far, your reaction, Mr. Jenrick. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Well, look, I'm deeply concerned by this. I don't think this is practical government. This is ideological. This is Keir Starmer, who, if you remember, handpicked a prisons minister who wanted to reduce the prison population by two-thirds. Surprise, surprise, announcing a massive change which is going to lead to more criminals out on our streets. And I come to this from the simple principle that if you have committed a serious offence, you should be properly punished, not just given a tag. A tag isn't going to stop somebody from reoffending. A tag isn't justice for victims. And what's being announced today is that anyone who commits an offence that would ordinarily have received a prison sentence of 12 months or less will be out on a tag. These are burglars and thieves. They are thugs who assault people. They're domestic abusers. And even for more serious crimes like arson or ABH, which command prison sentences of up to 4 years, the government are going to say that you can be released with having served only a third of your sentence. This is a slap in the face. It's giving criminals a get-out-of-jail-free card.
What did the Conservatives achieve in this area after 14 years in power, Mr. Jenner?
Well, government is tough. You have to take difficult decisions. And we strained every sinew to keep prisoners locked up. We deployed 1,000 rapid deployment cells. These are emergency prison cells. We signed prisoner transfer agreements with foreign countries like Albania. We did everything that we could to prevent this sort of situation. Well, it feels like Labour is reaching for the easy lever of releasing prisoners early rather than putting in the hard yards.
Is it true that the number of additional prison places provided during the Conservatives' years in power was 482?
We should have built more prison places, absolutely.
You built 482 additional prison places over 14 years, and you're lecturing this government, Mr. Jenrick. How do you think my listeners will react to that?
Well, because what needs to happen here is we need to have a proper plan that actually protects the public.
Well, what happened the government for 14 years?
Well, let me explain. What the government's saying is that they need to find 9,500 additional prison places in the years ahead. And they're going to do that by letting prisoners out early. What can happen instead is that we get the 10,800 foreign national offenders out of our prisons and deported from our country. Or we could tackle the 17,800 people who are in prison awaiting trial. But who aren't being put through the system quickly enough.
Why didn't
because
the Tories do that?
Well, we have worked on these things. But that's a lot of people. A third of the people in our prisons are either foreign national offenders or they are on remand awaiting trial. And so the government should be focusing on those things rather than, for ideological reasons, letting people out onto the streets early, which are going to put the public in danger, and I think spark a crime wave, because there's no sense of deterrence if instead of going to prison, you merely get a tag. And the Justice Secretary's latest big idea is called prison outside of prison. I don't even know what that means. That sounds ludicrous. The idea that a tag or not being allowed to go to a football match is somehow a punishment for a criminal.
If we can just look more broadly at the state of the Conservative Party, and I've highlighted where perhaps you could have done better in this field, do you think calamitous work such as that is why you now find yourself in fourth place behind the Lib Dems? Why is the party so unpopular?
Well, look, we're only less than a year after our worst ever electoral defeat.
It's not stop reform.
And there's a big job to be done to rebuild the trust and the confidence of the British public. My view has always been that we have to be painfully honest about the mistakes that we made. I've done that more than most on topics like immigration, for example. Ultimately, I resigned from the last Conservative government because I felt we were making the wrong calls. And then we've got to bring forward serious answers to the big challenges facing the country. But
which
it's going to be a long road.
14 years to solve, of course. I mean, that is the truth, isn't it? Reform are doing particularly well. The Lib Dems are doing okay. You guys are in reverse.
Well, we're going to have to change more. And we're going
change
to have
leader?
To demonstrate... No, I think Kemi Badenoch's doing a good job.
Really?
She's holding the government to account. You've seen that this week, where the campaign that she and others have fought on winter fuel allowances
has forced
the government
to change course.
She didn't
go after the PM over winter fuel until she was prompted from someone from behind, it looked to me.
Well, I don't think what pensioners waking up to the news that they might have a reprieve are going to worry about is the order in which Kemi Badenoch asked the question at Prime Minister's questions. They're going to be pleased that the campaign that she led has had a result. And it sounds that some, at least, of the pensioners who lost out next winter are going to get the winter fuel allowance again. But what I want to see is Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves apologise to people on incomes as little as £13,000 a year for the hardship they've had to endure over the course of the winter.
Last minute or so together, there were undoubtedly red faces for Labour yesterday over the winter fuel policy. You may not be aware, but otherwise I will tell you that the Chagos deal now has been paused. There will be no signing via video link-up or whatever it might be. Some are saying this is another very embarrassing day for the Labour administration, the Labour government. Mr. Jenrick?
This was a terrible, terrible deal. The Prime Minister was going to give away British sovereign territory to an ally of China, despite it having a critical base that we in the United States use to project power in the Pacific. And to make it worse, pay billions of pounds for the privilege, all because of his idea of international law and desire to be popular with human rights lawyers rather than putting the interest of the British public first. So all power to the group that have brought this legal challenge. I hope it succeeds and I hope it forces Keir Starmer to change course.
How embarrassing is this for the government, would you say, Mr. Jenrick?
Well, it's deeply embarrassing, but what I ultimately care about is the British national interest, and we mustn't be giving away sovereign territory that we need for our security merely because of a non-binding judgment by a foreign court.
All right. Lastly, and I know you can't comment on the proceedings, a member of the hip-hop trio Kneecap has been charged with a terror offence, and I wouldn't expect you to comment on that, but they are due to play at a festival on Friday, you might be aware, in Brockwell Park in South London in Brixton. How appropriate is that?
Completely inappropriate. The organisers of this concert have got to change course. We know what happened last time. This band glamorised, valorised terrorist organisations, and flags of proscribed terrorist organisations like Hezbollah were seen flying above the concert. It's completely outrageous that this goes ahead, and I call upon the organisers to stop it immediately.
Robert Jenrick, Conservative MP and Shadow Justice Secretary, tweeting us a reaction to that sentencing review. I remind you, of course, the man who's put it out, the reviewer, as it were, David Gawke, is taking your calls in the next hour. But it's 9:01, LBC News headlines next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, more offenders will serve community sentences under plans to end prison overcrowding in England and Wales. The former Justice Secretary, David Gawke, has put forward a series of suggestions as part of an independent sentencing review. He'll be taking your calls later in the programme. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
We understand ministers will accept the majority of these recommendations, including a tiered system which would allow most inmates to earn their way out of jail much earlier, while women and vulnerable offenders, it said, should be given more deferred and suspended sentences, meaning they will avoid going to prison. The review also says a trial of chemical castration for paedophiles should be continued, with a wider rollout explored to stop reoffending.
A judge has granted a last-minute injunction to temporarily block the handover of the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. Sir Keir Starmer had been due to sign the controversial deal in a virtual ceremony around now. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark says the ruling was made at 2:25 this morning.
High Court Judge Mr Justice Goose granted the last-ditch bid to stop it, which could stop the move from going ahead at all. The injunction blocks the government from being able to conclude their negotiations over the territory. The government refused to comment on legal cases this morning, but a spokesperson said the deal was the right thing for the UK to protect the British people and national security. A fuller hearing will take place this morning.
Two Israeli embassy staff have been shot dead near a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. Police say the 30-year-old suspect, who has been arrested, shouted "Free Palestine" at the scene of the attack. The victims have been named in Israeli media as Yaron Lashinsky and Sarah Milgram. The Irish rap group Kneecap say they will vehemently defend themselves after a band member was charged with a terror offence. Liam O'Hanna is due in court in London next month, accused of displaying a Hezbollah flag at a gig. Kneecap are still due to headline a festival in Brockwell Park in South London tomorrow night. Tottenham manager Ange Postecoglou says winning the Europa League is the toughest thing he's ever done. They beat Manchester United 1-0 in Bilbao last night, with Spurs lifting their first trophy since 2008. Postecoglou says he made the decision in January to go all out for the European win.
That's come at a cost for sure in the league, and I've got to take the responsibility for that. But I just felt like the end game of winning something was more important, and it was the only way I was going to do it.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading at 87.39. That's down 47. The pound buys $1.34 and Euro 18. LBC weather. Most places dry with bright spells, but a band of cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales through the day. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Nudists get £10 off when they spend £100 at the IKEA Weekender event. So can bookworms, cat people, dad dancers, and attention seekers. Anyone can get £10 off this weekend at your local IKEA as an IKEA family member. Even hay fever sufferers. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Offer available in UK stores between 23rd and 26th of May. T's and C's apply. Find out more at ikea.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after nine on Thursday, May the 22nd. It is that judicial review. The Justice Department commissioning a former Justice Secretary. The sentencing review. How our prisons should work, indeed, for many people. How they shouldn't even go to jail in the first place. David Gawke, who's with us later, chaired this sentencing review.
I want there to be less crime. I want there to be fewer victims. What is the best way in which we can use our resources to stop people offending? Very often, addressing the causes of the crime will be effective.
More on that in a moment. Plus, your opportunity to put your calls directly to him. And in other news... to the giant banking organisation, HSBC, that's telling staff if you want to be in the money when it comes to bonuses, it would help to be in the office as well.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
While there are many aspects of the sentencing review that are of great interest, and I remind you, we'll have David Gawke here to go through it in just over 25 minutes' time, ideas of greater use of community orders, trying to get away from locking people up for short periods of time, pregnant women, other vulnerable offenders given more deferred or even suspended sentences of up to 3 years. The one that jumps out for a lot of the headline writers is the idea of giving paedophiles medication to what's called suppress their libido. OK, to you and I, it's known as chemical castration. It should be explored further. Now, just last week, Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood warned the prison estate in England and Wales was on course to run out of space by November, despite previous emergencies and efforts to release inmates early. So one way is, of course, the idea of this chemical castration of paedophiles and other sex offenders. Well, just in the last 15 minutes or so, I was joined by Shadow Justice Secretary, Conservative Robert Jenrick. Asked him for his reactions.
Look, I'm deeply concerned by this. I don't think this is practical government. This is ideological. This is Keir Starmer, who, if you remember, handpicked a prisons minister who wanted to reduce the prison population by two-thirds. Surprise, surprise, announcing a massive change which is going to lead to more criminals out on our streets. And I come to this from a simple principle that if you have committed a serious offence, you should be properly punished, not just given a tag. A tag isn't going to stop somebody from reoffending. A tag isn't justice for victims. And what's being announced today is that anyone who commits an offence that would ordinarily have received a prison sentence of 12 months or less will be out on a tag. These are burglars and thieves. They are thugs who assault people. They're domestic abusers. And even for more serious crimes like arson or ABH, which command prison sentences of up to 4 years, the government are going to say that you can be released with having served only a third of your sentence. This is a slap in the face. It's giving criminals a get-out-of-jail-free card.
What did the Conservatives achieve in this area after 14 years in power, Mr. General?
Well, government is tough. You have to take difficult decisions. And we strained every sinew to keep prisoners locked up. We deployed 1,000 rapid deployment cells. These are emergency prison cells. We signed prisoner transfer agreements with foreign countries like Albania. We did everything that we could to prevent this sort of situation. Well, it feels like Labour is reaching for the easy lever of releasing prisoners early rather than putting in the hard yards.
And as I then went on to point out to Robert Jenrick, the number of prison spaces added by the Conservatives after 14 years in power, or the power in the coalition, was 482, which is averages around 34 and a half, I think, if I've got my sums right, over a 14-year period. So the idea, as I said to him, that they're now telling this government how to run the jails is, to me, risible. But let's get to someone who is right at the front line of this. Phil Hannant is prison officer and National Executive Committee member for the Prison Officers Association. I'm going to ask you a little bit, if I can, Mr. Hannant, about so-called castration, chemical castration. But first, from what you're hearing so far of the sentencing review, your initial reaction. Good morning.
Good morning. My initial reaction on the sentencing review is, you know, prisons are at an all-time high population crisis. You know, we've already had the previous schemes that released thousands of prisoners. Those prisoners are already back in jail. So obviously, it is an attempt just to release spaces.
What's the reality on the front line for the men and women you work with?
Well, the reality is, as I say, they're under intense pressure. Obviously, they turn in day in day out professional doing the job, with the crisis of the prison bursting at the seams.
What would you want to ask of the former senior politician who's conducted this review?
The issue is prison places and rehabilitation. The infrastructures aren't there. The infrastructures aren't there for when prisoners are released. So we ultimately are releasing prisoners to fail. Without, you know, probation is under huge, huge pressures as well, and they don't have them. The facilities outside for rehabilitation for certainly drug users isn't there. Without an infrastructure, prisoners will churn and churn and churn and return back into incarceration.
So your phone goes and someone, the Justice Secretary, someone who works for her, says, what do you think we need to do? What would be the first two positive steps you would outline?
First positive step would be to invest in the prison service, invest in prison officers, pay the right wages, and then we would get...
How would that make the jails better, Mr. Hannant? Why would that make them better?
Because how it would make it better would be recruitment would... We wouldn't be in a recruitment crisis where we have prison officers sent the length and breadth of the country to man areas that, to be fair, you can go to work in Amazon, Tesco, Safeways, McDonald's and earn the same wages as prison officers who day in, day out are being assaulted.
And the second idea?
The second idea is, again, like I say, you know, possibly look at how we fix the jails that are dilapidated, they're falling down, the...
So better, you know, better infrastructure.
Infrastructure. Okay. And, you know, that would help by, to be fair, returning the works departments back in-house rather than outsourcing to private.
Grateful for your time, Phil Hannant, your prison officer and your National Executive Committee member for the Prison Officers Association. Let's bring into the conversation Kate Bex, who is criminal barrister at Red Lion Chambers and a KC. Again, this is your daily work. What will you be listening out particularly as more details emerge from the David Gawt review? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'll be listening out particularly for how the laudable attempt to reduce offending is actually funded, because as your last caller just identified, rehabilitation is in everybody's interest. That is what reduces crime, which has to be surely everybody's aim. But in order to do that, there has to be money to fund programs both in prison and outside prison. And at the moment, there simply isn't. One of the real problems with overcrowding that a lot of people don't understand is that it results in prisoners being locked up in their cells for 23 hours out of 24. And whilst that might sound superficially attractive if you have a particular view that, that prisoners ought to be treated particularly badly, what it actually means is that they receive no education. Illiteracy rates amongst the prison population are far higher than they are amongst the general population. And that, of course, then means that people are almost unemployable when they leave prison. So it is, in fact, in everyone's interests to focus on rehabilitation, to make prison not necessarily easier, but certainly more constructive. Simply locking people in small rooms for 23 hours out of 24 is not in anyone's interest in reducing crime.
What should the purpose of prison be?
It should be both punitive and also rehabilitative. The aim should be to rehabilitate those that are capable of rehabilitation and to keep out of society those who are not.
What do you hope central government takes from the Gawke Review?
I hope they take the message that it's not something to be proud of to have doubled the prison population since 1993. It's not something to be proud of to have the highest prison population in Western Europe. That prison does not always work and that there are many better alternatives if what one really wants is to reduce crime. But it costs. And as your last caller said, probation are massively overworked. I don't know where these new probation officers are going to come from. And I don't know how it's going to be funded. And that's often not a popular one because people just don't understand that, in fact, that would be in all our interests in reducing crime.
Always enjoy speaking with you, Kate. Thank you. Kate Bex is a criminal barrister at Red Lion Chambers. And KC, calls coming in, and you'll be the first caller on that. Also coming up after the news, if you want to get in the money with the bonuses at HSBC, you'll have to get into the office too. We'll look at that in more detail. 9.15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A review led by the former Justice Secretary David Gawke has recommended a series of measures to end overcrowding in prisons in England and Wales. The High Court has granted an injunction temporarily blocking the handover of the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. Two Israeli embassy staff have been shot dead near a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, but dry and bright for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 southbound junction 10 at Luton Airport after that lorry was on fire earlier. The M25 is very busy anti-clockwise from junction 22 at London Coney to 19 at Watford, and that was after an accident. On the M25, anti-clockwise, there are delays to junction 9 at Leatherhead. It's following an accident. Two lanes are closed for recovery. Severe delays all the way back to junction 11 at Chertsey, but also long delays on the surrounding routes, especially the A3. In South Kensington, traffic on Kensington Gore is being held again westbound, and that's all down to the final bit of recovery from an accident. And on the underground, there are still minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night, to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. Mm. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
When you're smiling...
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The big sentencing review. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Anne in Southend on Sea. What are you going to tell me, Anne? Good morning.
Hello. Well, I'm just wondering, Nick, if when the people go and they get these sentences, will they carry the same structure of as previous convictions, where people carry that conviction with them for the rest of their lives, right? Or will they be getting away easier with this because several
people? What's your
people...
concern? Break this down. What is the actual concern, and then hopefully I might be able to address it a little more for you.
Well, what I'm trying to say is there's people out there, several people who can't get work or whose work opportunities are not as good as they could be because they've committed a crime, say, 10 years ago, X amount of years ago. They've stayed completely clean. They can't get work because...
Well, it's going to be on the severity of the crime, isn't it? If it's a fairly low-level crime, if they've been 10 years without any suggestion of reoffence, then all being well, they could be able to enter the employment market. If, however, they were convicted of murder or a more serious crime, then obviously it's going to be a different
absolutely.
Take on it.
Absolutely. More serious crimes, 100%. 100%. Mm. But less serious crimes, you know, such as... I say every crime is serious. Every crime is serious. Don't get me wrong.
Perhaps a little bit of... I'm not paying your TV licence or something like that. I am not condoning it, supporting it for a moment, but it's not exactly on the same as being involved in GBH or something, is it? So I see what you're saying.
No.
So your fear is... I don't want to put words in your mouth. You're concerned that people will not be able to get jobs when they come out. Is that the reality of it?
Well, this is a situation now because of draconian laws that somebody's... example, I have a friend.
You have a friend, right. And what's this... What's this friend done?
Well, unfortunately, wasn't going through a very good time at the time.
Right.
Mentally. And unfortunately, was working for an employer. And he stole from them.
Right. Okay. How much did your friend steal?
It was in the region of, I believe... Hello?
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 Hello! Anne, how...
Hello?
Hello! How much... This is what radio was invented for.
Hello?
Hello! How much did your friend steal? No, I think we've lost the line to Southend-on-Sea. What a shame. We'll... If we get Anne back, can we ask how much was stolen? Because, honestly, the people now won't be able to go to work wondering how much was taken. Hello? Anne, unfortunately, we couldn't hear you, but we're trying to get you on another line. Let's go to another story while we tidy that up, because we need to come back to that first. And I said earlier, if you want to get your bonus at one of Britain's biggest banks, actually, I think it's one of the world's biggest banks, then you're going to have to go into the office. Is that so desperately unfair? I speak of HSBC saying... If staff fail to come in for the required 3 days a week, so it's not 5 days a week, it's not even 4 days a week, I think you can see where I'm going with this, it's just 3 days a week. And this is seen as the latest example, particularly among financial companies, JP Morgan and others, particularly over in the United States, wanting their staff to be coming in for at least 3 days a week. HSBC emailed staff. They have 23,000 people across offices and branches. Wow, 20, they're quite an employer, aren't they? To talk about how this hybrid policy rules would be enforced. It requires staff to be in the office or with customers if you're a customer-facing member of staff. 60% of the time for around 18 months. It informed employees, the workers, internal attendance data would be used. Oh, I wonder what that means, internal attendance data. I wonder if they have those, what do you call them, pass cards? I bet they do. That's how they know whether you go in or not. Bloomberg News broke this story, by the way, we need to say. And HSBC declined to comment. Well, that normally tells you, I'm not saying that it is the case, but normally when people decline to comment, it's probably because they might be onto something. As I say, they're not alone. Other financial institutions are doing the same. So if you want a bonus, is it so wrong to expect you to go to work 3 days a week? Harriet Minter is a hybrid work consultant and a partner at Leap Leadership Development and joins me now. OK, in a sentence, what do you do at Leap Leadership Development? What do you offer to people? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. So we work with employers and their staff to help them have better working lives and more productive. So specifically, we help them develop better relationships with each other, talk to each other more, listen to each other more, and hopefully have more profitable and more enjoyable working lives.
What's the best way to talk and listen to someone?
So really, the best way to talk is to be curious, and the best way to listen is to listen for what not is just being said, but also what the person perhaps is worried about saying or feels they can't say. Mm. And in this case, when we're talking about actually how do we bring people back to the office, one of the things I'm really interested in is if your team are not coming back 3 days a week and you have specifically said that is the requirement, are you checking in with them about why? Are you asking them really what's going on? What is making it difficult? Because as an employer, I think you have a right to say we want you in the office 3 days a week. And I think you have a right to enforce that if you've decided that is what works for you. But if you are trying to enforce it on people who feel perhaps they have family responsibilities they can't meet, or perhaps they have health conditions they don't want to talk about, if you can create that relationship where they can share honesty with you, you're going to get to the bottom of the problem quicker and hopefully resolve it faster.
Just play back some of your words to you. You want to help people talk and listen. Surely the best way to talk and listen is in person, isn't it? Because while I'm enjoying my conversation with you, Harriet, there will be visual cues that I can't get from you because you're at the other end of a phone. I think you smiled then, but I don't know. Hopefully it was a smile. It might have been a grimace. I don't know. But I can't get the full sense of our interaction because I'm just looking at a microphone and you're talking into your phone. No?
There is a lot to be said for being in person. People certainly find it easier in person. There's nothing to say you can't have these conversations in person. And also, we have worked in a world with the telephone for, what, 200 years now? So we do know how to do it.
No, is it?
Yeah, I don't know either, but we do know how to do it. No, it wouldn't be quite
bad. So more than 100, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had radio for however long. So we understand tone of voice. We understand how to build relationships. Yeah, we understand how to do questions.
But when it comes to financial institutions, how would you encourage them to help staff see what they would see, the bosses see, as the wisdom of their ways? Why we want you in, why we want you taking part in meetings, learning from the culture of the place. 3 days a week. They're not going back to the bad old days of 5 days a week, which I grew up with.
I think this is the problem that businesses have, which is, unfortunately, they don't have a strong argument for why they want people in person. So we say we want people in person because it improves culture, it improves performance. But then we can't actually show people the numbers because the numbers don't exist to support that.
They spend hundreds of thousands of pounds trying to build, some of these companies trying to build a culture. Mm-hmm. And they send them off on away days and they have team building days and they do all of this and they want to get through that we're a caring workforce and come in and see us 3 days a week. That can't all be wrong, can it?
No, it's not wrong. It's great that they're doing that stuff. But the reality is, what you're saying to people is, the only way that happens is if you're in the office 3 days a week, and they are not feeling it.
But why would they? I don't see how you can persuade them, because, as you rightly point out, if we go back to the dark days of COVID, a lot of these staff will have been at home 7 days a week, and they will have worked their families around that now, so they pick up or drop off children from school or see elderly parents or look after vulnerable friends or whatever it might be. Well, it's very difficult now to reinvent the wheel from that, isn't it?
It is hugely difficult to reinvent the wheel. And so you actually have to say, perhaps we don't need the wheel at all. Maybe we build something completely different. So rather than trying to do a kind of a bastardised version of the 5 days a week, well, it's just 3 days, so it's okay. When you do that, what you're actually saying is, we know you don't want to be in the office. It's painful, so we're only going to ask you to do it 3 days a week.
Harriet, I enjoyed our conversation. Good luck at Leap, as in jump, Leap Leadership Development. Harriet Minter is a hybrid work consultant. Listening is Fitim in Tottenham. How many days a week do you work, Fitim? Hello.
Hello. I working 5 days a week on construction site.
You're a construction worker, yes. Are you?
Yes, okay. Yes.
You can't really work from home, can you?
No, exactly. And I'm laughing because, you know, I come back home, my hands hurt, my feet hurt, everything hurting.
Yeah.
And these guys complaining. Yeah, they're complaining, they come in 3 days a week to tap away on keyboard. Come on. You know, it's too much. You know, sometimes you have
now,
to...
Now, are you being a little bit jealous here, Fitim? Would you like to sit at home 3 days a week? Two days a week, tapping on a keyboard, as you put
it. Look, I would love it. I would love it. It would be my favorite thing to do. I honestly... Because when you're picking up things all day, shouting, here,
you know, why are you shouting, here? You're not an MP, are you? Why are you shouting, here?
Oh, I don't know. I say, come bring the thing here.
Oh, I see. Come here. Right here. Sorry. So what do you do? Are you a bricklayer?
Yeah, I do everything, boss. I mostly plumbing, but I do everything. Everything you ask, I do.
Okay. How long have you been doing it?
7 years.
How old are you? Do you mind my asking what sort of age you are?
How old do you think?
32.
Oh, 31, but very close, huh?
The only skill I've got is telling people's ages from their voice. I've been doing it for 21 years, so if ever Scotland Yard needs someone to tell someone's age from a voice, it's about my only skill set. Listen, good luck. What were you doing before you were doing that, then? Hang on, so you're 24. So as a young man, you were doing what? Well, you're still a young man. As a younger man.
I was coffee shop. I had one coffee shop and stuff like that.
Did you?
And again, on my feet in the office or whatever you call, I go in every day, but this,
All right, I do know. Thanks for having a sense of humour. Look after yourself next time you're up a ladder, hawking those bricks around. Here's the way of this, of course, when it comes to this. Let's just say, for the purpose of debate, that the annual bonus that you're entitled to is £10,000. But if you come into work for 3 days, then you'll be entitled to, of course, you see where I'm going with this, £6,000. If you come in 2 days, £4,000. Do you think that was to encourage staff to get back behind their desks? Who knows? It's a big sentencing review day today. It has been much anticipated, and the government, which inherited, in all candour, an absolute crisis in our jails, has been waiting for the outcomes of the work done by this man.
With overcrowding, with the capacity issues, comes lots of other issues with the system. It's very hard to deliver rehabilitation within prisons, for example, when there are so many people within it.
That's the chair of the sentence, Justice Sentencing, David Gawke, and he's here taking your calls after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Serious sex offenders could face chemical castration as part of plans in a review of sentencing policy. More criminals will also be released early or serve sentences in the community to help ease jail overcrowding in England and Wales. A suspect has been arrested after two Israeli embassy staff were shot and killed in Washington, D.C. The man and woman, who were a young couple, were killed in the apparent targeted attack at about 9 p.m. local time. A deal for Britain to hand over sovereignty of the Chagos Islands to Mauritius has been put on hold. A High Court judge has granted an injunction. Sir Keir Starmer had been due to sign off on the deal this morning. LBC weather, cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales, largely dry and bright for most, though a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple. When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Please keep your personal belongings with you at all times. Except for that IKEA sofa you just purchased from the new Oxford Street store. Rest assured, that will be delivered to your home later, along with everything else you can't fit in your Fracta bag. Thank you for travelling with us. Without your new sofa.
IKEA now open on Oxford Street. Delivery available. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's time for LBC to do what it does best, which is not just to cover the story, but to try and get to the people at the very heart of the story. And this justice sentencing has been making headlines. It's in the newspapers today, and it's on all the news media. But we are the only place where not only have you got the man at the very heart of it, more importantly, you get to put your questions as you've heard it, as you've digested it, as you've possibly read some of it. You have someone with whom you can speak and put a question. So, welcome, David Gawke. You've chaired the Ministry of Justice Sentencing Review. Good to have you on board. Thanks for coming in, sir.
A pleasure.
We've spoken a couple of times during the interim. I think you've been kind, I think, to speak at least twice, maybe more. Now it's concluded. What is the most significant aspect you've learnt about either our prison system or our judicial system? Where would you want to start?
I think the first point I would make is that all the reports that the prison system is under strain, that is true, that our prisons are full, in fact the population is growing faster than we thought it was when we started this process in October. As you would have heard last week, we're currently on course, or we would have been on course, run out of places in the adult male estate in November. The government announced some measures to try to address that. But we're still on course to run out of places next spring. And if we go forward another couple of years, we're not just running out of places, we're running out of places in a pretty big way. You know, 9,500 more people projected to be sentenced to prison and should be in prison than we have places. So that is the sort of big striking point from this process, and that, you know, has confirmed we're going to have to take action.
Why have we, and if I can indicate perhaps why have you as a former senior Conservative minister, been so bad at providing places, Mr. Gawke?
So what we've got is essentially, this is driven by more people going to prison. Fundamentally, that the largest cause of that is longer prison sentences. We've seen some changes, particularly in recent years, in 2020 and 2022, that have had an impact. But it has, in truth, been building up for some time. We have been slow in building prisons in terms of the process. From commissioning a prison to them being built does take quite a long time. That's why we just don't have an option, by the way, of building our way out of this short-term crisis. There have been moments where the prison population has plateaued. I would say that when I was Justice Secretary, it was pretty stable. But it's been going up rapidly here. Part of it has been, perhaps the police are arresting people, more people are being charged, and so on. And some people, you know, can understandably say that's a good and healthy point, but it has left us with this issue. So we do have to face up to that reality. There's no easy way of just sort of ignoring it, hoping it will go away. There's some easy solution that's out there that we're not making use of. It does require quite difficult choices.
Okay, sir. Pens at the ready. Enough from me for now. Let's get those questions going. Peter's in, where are you? Peter's in Crosby in Liverpool. Peter, you're through to David Gawke. Go ahead, Peter. Morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Gawke. I worked for the Probation Service for over 30 years, and much of what you've said in this review is very, very familiar. It's going to place a lot more pressure on the Probation Service, which, as you know, has been reorganised twice in the last 15 years. And I know the sort of things that you're saying about more resources are needed, different uses of technology, third sector, targeted at high-risk offenders. Now, all this has been done before. There's nothing new in this. But what is new is the amount of resource that is needed to implement this on a much larger scale.
So what is your direct question to David Gawke, Peter, if I can move you to that?
Well, my direct question is, these resources for the Probation Service, are they going to follow a complete rethinking of the role of the Probation Service, an overhaul of the way the Probation Service is organised and its priorities?
David Gawke?
So I think Peter has immediately raised one of the most important issues here and very central to our recommendations. If you are moving people from custody into the community, you need to make sure that we can cope in the community. And the challenge that is made to everyone here is, well, you know, can we cope? And at the moment, the probation system is under strain, and we are very upfront about that.
Understaffed as well, is it? Under strain, under resourced?
Yeah, both.
All of the above.
There is an issue about not retaining staff quickly enough. To be fair to the government, they have for some time had ambitious plans in terms of recruiting new people, but just as we're recruiting people, we're losing people and so on. And although this was a review of sentencing policy, we took the view very early on, myself and the panel with whom I've worked, that we also have to set out a series of recommendations on probation. And Peter's touched on many
of
those.
So in addition to what you've done today, do you mean that's still...
No, that's in there. There is a chapter in our review that is dedicated to
that. And what are the headlines from that chapter?
From that are more resources. Peter actually has given a very good summary of it. Greater use of technology. Now, let me give you an example of this. Probation officers spend quite a lot of time every day writing up notes of the meetings that they have had with offenders. Increasingly, in the rest of the world, we're using AI to do that. There's already a pilot in place to make use of AI to write up notes. We recommend that is expanded very rapidly. That can free up time for probation officers. It also gives probation officers to do the work that they want to do. They don't become probation officers because they have a strong desire to write up notes. They have a strong desire to help offenders, and we want to give them more time to do that. I think, again, as Peter mentions, about reprioritisation of probation time on the most dangerous and the most prolific offenders, and using the third sector. There are a lot of terrific voluntary organisations out there who can do a lot of the work to assist the probation service.
And the government has already said, you're probably aware, they're trying to earmark £700 million for the probation service. I think that announcement is today. Is that enough?
Well, it's a very substantial increase.
It's a major step.
It's a major step in the direction. Of course, one could always ask for more. I'd like to see the details of how that's going to work. There are plenty of demands for spending in this area, but I think it would be fair to acknowledge that that is a major uplift on current spending. Right. So I find that encouraging, but I'd like to see the details.
Peter, thanks for the work you do. Moving on to Graham in Swindon. Graham, you're through to David Gore. Go ahead with your question. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, do you not think that for the more prolific shoplifters and stuff like that you're effectively giving them the green light to let them know that the system doesn't work?
Why does this interest you? Do you own a store? Have you had problems with this?
No, I've done store detective work for over 10 years.
Right.
So I was at the front of it, catching the prolific shoplifters that they would get arrested, go to the CPS. The CPS would just... not enough evidence, and then they would be out back doing it again.
Lastly, the newspapers would say there's been a marked escalation in the amount of shoplifting offences over the recent months and years, actually. You're, again, at the front line. Would you concur with that, Graham? Is that about right?
100%.
100%. All right, let's stay on the line. We might come back to you. What do you think lies behind this, if I can use the word, explosion in shoplifting?
Well, it certainly is a significant increase in shoplifting. I think a lot of this is in truth about enforcement and prosecutions. The evidence tends to suggest that what deters offenders is more likely the chance of enforcement, i.e. being convicted, than the length of any prison sentence. But in terms of our recommendations, we've got to think who these really prolific offenders are. And I don't for a moment seek to excuse or justify their behaviour, but they are, by and large, drug addicts, alcoholics, and what happens if they are convicted and sentenced to prison? They go in for a few weeks, a few months. It does nothing to address those problems. To be honest, their problems may well get worse. You know, if they've got a home, they might lose their home. If they have a job, they often don't, but if they have a job, they lose their job. Family relations get damaged. They come out, they're more likely to reoffend. And yes, society...
How do you break the cycle?
So there's a number of proposals in there. There's more, I think, we can do about drug treatment, about alcohol treatment. There's monitoring that can be done.
What do you mean by monitoring?
So actually you can equip them with a tag that will be able to tell whether they've consumed any alcohol or not.
And what happens to them then?
I mean,
They go back into jail.
Well, you have then
got them there in the first place.
No, well then you can. You know, there are measures. I mean, look, we're not ruling out the possibility that someone can go to jail. Although we think short sentences are a mistake, there will be exceptional circumstances where it is the right thing to do, where someone has breached an order or reoffended. But actually, compliance with these alcohol monitoring tags is extraordinarily high, in fact. One of the recommendations we make is something called intensive supervision courts. We've got four of those piloted at the moment in this country, but they're used around the world. And what happens there is that offenders meet regularly with a judge. They will assess their progress. There are regular meetings. And actually, the evidence from that is that that does break the cycle. Because your question, Nick, about how do you break the cycle is the right one. What we know is that short prison sentences are pretty useless in doing that.
But there is sort of negative reaction already to the idea of tagging or possibly people not going to be able to see their football matches if they were involved in some kind of crime around a football game. Something I put to your former colleague, Conservative Shadow Justice Secretary Robert Jenrick.
There's no sense of deterrence if instead of going to prison, you merely get a tag. And the Justice Secretary's latest big idea is called prison outside of prison. I don't even know what that means. That sounds ludicrous. The idea that a tag or not being allowed to go to a football match is somehow a punishment for a criminal.
How would you respond to your former colleague?
Robert's an old friend of mine, but I disagree with him on this particular issue.
Where do you think the public are?
There will be
someone's
different
nicked
views.
My car, yeah. I want them to go to jail.
Yeah,
I don't want to be able to just not go and see Tottenham win a game.
Yeah, well, you know, there'd be it's a good day for Tottenham today, but they'd be pretty lucky to see Tottenham win a game this season. But look, in terms of punishment is important. It is part of the system. We shouldn't think that punishment only means prison. There will be people, for example, who a driving ban will be a real inconvenience and difficulty for them, and it will feel like punishment. But we also have to recognise that it's not just about punishment, it is also about rehabilitation. And although we might feel better about someone going inside for a few weeks, does it stop them committing crime in future? And I think most victims want there to be fewer victims in future, and that focus on reducing crime is important.
Let's get a quick response from Graham from what you've heard. Coming back to you, just remind everybody, you've been in store security for years, you have witnessed this rapid increase in numbers. Graham?
Yeah, hello.
Yes, your response to what you've heard?
The response of, obviously, the fear of a conviction and stuff like that. These people are not scared of the conviction, hence the reason that they keep doing what they're doing.
Why do you suppose they're not scared, Graham, lastly? Do they ever tell you, oh, I don't care because whatever, whatever, or do they not?
No, because they know that they basically, if they do end up doing a prison sentence, it's short. They'll probably come out knowing more about crime than they went in.
Well, some would say that speaks to the point that Mr. Gork made about education, of course, and in a way, we don't want we don't want prison sentences to be effectively a time of university of crime. Graham, good luck with the work you're doing. Look after yourself. Stay safe. Thank you. Bill's in Edmonton in London. Bill, you're through to David Gork. Go ahead. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. I was a prison officer many years ago. What I'd like to know is what you're going to do about the conditions that prison staff have to work in, and also staffing numbers, because one of the major concerns I had, and I still do, was the conditions that prison staff had to work in. Morale was incredibly low, mainly due to understaffing. Even when you were at full capacity, official full capacity, I was on a wing that was 30-1, C-Wing or Wormwood Scrubs. Now, obviously, that's not only a security risk, but was hugely contributed to the lack of rehabilitation, because prisoners do have needs, whether they like it or not. And they also need to be addressed when there's wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
And with a lack of staff, you just can't deal with it all. So rehabilitation, you know, an awful lot of it was down, down to the fact that there just weren't the staff to deal with sort of day-to-day issues. And unlike police officers, firefighters, healthcare staff and teachers, prison staff are not directly required by members of the public, so the well-being of prison staff isn't therefore seen as a vote winner.
Okay. I'm going to finish there because so many people want to... I think, Bill, what I'm going to sum up is better conditions, better pay, much as we said about probation staff. What about prison officers as well, Mr. Gawke?
Well, can I thank Bill for the service he did as a prison officer? But that point about overcrowded prisons makes it harder for prison officers. It makes it harder to rehabilitate prisoners. And again, I think that is an argument for taking action here. We run our prisons really hot. You know, they are full. It is hard to move people to the right prisons, get them where they need to be, if they should be in a training prison or wherever it might be. If you can reduce some of that pressure, and Bill's point about the prisoner to staff ratio, you know, one way of addressing that is to control the prison population. So I agree with the point that Bill is making, and I hope that you know, looking at our report, some of the measures there are important. Also on discipline within prisons, you know, we recommend a progression model that takes more account of how prisoners behave within prison. So they'll be released at one point if they behave. If they don't behave, they'll be released later. That, I think, is a useful tool for prison officers in terms of maintaining discipline within prisons.
Bill, I absolutely agree there. Thank you for the work you did. Staying with prison officers, Mr. Gawke, you'll be aware there's been a series of fairly high-level attacks on some prison office staff, and there was a call around 10 days or so ago for the idea of a so-called supermax jails or supermax prisons or units. Where do you stand on that?
First of all, it is disgraceful what has happened, and I think everybody's sympathies are with the prison officers and their families. We do need discipline within our prisons. We haven't looked specifically at that with us outside of our terms of reference as a sort of sentencing review. We do, but you know, clearly we need to do what we can to protect prison officers. It is unacceptable that they're put under the risks. You know, they face the danger that they do. And so I would, my own view is I'd want to look at the evidence to see what is effective to do that. I would certainly consider that measure.
Mr. Gawke, you know how the media works. So one aspect that they've alighted upon, you won't be surprised, is this idea of so-called chemical castration. How exactly would that work? Would people be mandated to it? Has it been piloted anywhere in the United Kingdom? David Gawke.
So in terms of our recommendations, there is currently a pilot in place in the southwest of England for chemical suppressants. It is a voluntary arrangement. It is focused on some sexual offenders. I don't think this is the right answer for many sexual offenders, but for some who have got sexual desires that they actively want to suppress.
Well, the Sun suggests it's paedophiles you would be looking at.
Well,
is that correct?
For example, yes. So, right. So, and I mean, I was talking to a friend who works in this area who knows of cases where you had offenders who are desperate to rid themselves of these desires and were very keen to be able to take chemical suppressants to try to reduce those urges. What we argue for in this report is that we build up the evidence base, that we continue that pilot. But what we are looking at, what we are recommending is a voluntary arrangements, and as I say, particularly targeted. This is used elsewhere. We've looked at international evidence on a whole range of things. All we're saying here is that we should look at it.
So if I use myself as an example, I'm taking it on trust, or it is administered to me by an NHS clinic, whatever the drug is, or how does it work?
Yes, yeah, so it's administered.
Ah, so I know the system knows I've had my injection.
But this is
injection
all,
oral.
This
how is, I don't even know how it's done.
I think it's an injection, right. As I understand it. But look, I think this is one where we want to build up the evidence. And let's be clear, this is not a solution to most sex offenders. But it could play a role in reducing risk and allowing some of these offenders to move on, if you like.
You rightly reference that a lot of petty crime, although not petty for the people involved, is sometimes fueled by addiction to alcohol and drugs. Is there ever an idea that you would look at people taking drugs that would limit, that would actually stop their intake of alcohol or stop their, I know it sounds weird, but drugs to stop them taking drugs?
Yes, yes, and it's one of the points that we mention in that. There's very early evidence, and we stress this is early evidence, that some of the weight loss drugs may, yet another use for them, may well be effective in terms of reducing desire to consume a lot of alcohol. Now, that That is very early evidence. There's nothing registered for it. There's lots of, you know, the trials need to be done. But there is some evidence that could suppress
the drug. Does everything.
It does have feeling like stops that, yeah.
I'm going to teach you to play the piano if you take it. It's ceaseless, this drug. My goodness.
I don't want to sort of overstate it. We urge the government to monitor that, because that is something that potentially down the line could play a useful part.
There you go. You get a Ozempic and you give up the grog as well. Nadine's in Cardiff. You're on the radio, Nadine. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Good morning, Mr. Gawk. My son Connor was murdered in 2015 by a supervised known offender who was currently serving two community orders. My question to you is, why is it that victims' families are again not considered or represented in this review? Even given the additional powers of the Victims Commissioner, we're still not recognised and still not part of any statutory law.
Well, can I just say on victims, and Nadine, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, and thank you for raising this case. The point about victims is an important one. In fact, one of our recommendations is that in the purposes of sentencing, there needs to be explicit reference to victims, which is not the case at the moment. One of the panel members is a representative of the victims community and was a very influential voice in terms of drawing up our recommendations. There are a number of measures that we set out in terms of our recommendations here that are relevant to victims.
Shouldn't you have more victims' voices?
Well, we did have a victim's voice on the panel, so absolutely. We engaged very heavily with the Victims Commissioner, the Domestic Abuse Commissioner, and many victims' groups. I've spoken to many victims in the course of this report. I'd make the sort of fundamental point on victims of crime is what most victims want is to ensure that there are fewer victims in future. And that is why we have to be very focused on reducing crime overall. That punishment is, as I say, an important part of our system. But so is rehabilitation in terms of reducing crime. And when it comes to community sentences, the point that we are arguing for is for them to be more effective, that offenders are more closely managed, more closely scrutinised, particularly at the high-risk period when, say, they're released from prison. That's the point of greatest chance of re-offending. So I do understand the concerns, Nadine, that you have raised here. Okay. But also, of course, it is not good for victims if we end up with an emergency set of releases of prisoners.
My condolences to you as well, Nadine. Thank you for your call and as much comfort as you can get. On a related story that you won't be aware of, Mr. Gawk, LBC has done some research that shows that between January 2020 and April 2024, 244 offenders were let out from prison on licence, went on to be charged with a murder committed after their release, which obviously, again, asks questions of the system. You didn't have sight of this, so this is coming to you fresh. Your reaction to the figures I've just shared with you?
Clearly that number is too high. I think there's a couple of points I would want to make on that. The first is we do need to be more effective about supervision in the community. And, if you like, our central recommendation about a new progression model does essentially say we shouldn't go from the point at which someone is in prison and then they're released on licence. And, yes, they might have meetings and what have you, But that isn't working as well as it could do, and what we recommend is a more intensive supervision so that people are, if you like, eased back into society to a greater extent, and we think we can make use of technology to a greater extent, tagging, right, home detention and so on.
Final question, Christine in Maidenhead. Can you keep it fairly brief, Christine, because I've got about 2 minutes before my colleague James comes in. Your question.
Yes, of course, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. Thanks. And hello, Mr. Gawk. So is it fair that offenders who took part in the riots last summer are receiving substantially less prison jail time than Lucy Connolly.
This is, of course, the woman who put out what's called the Southport text, in which she made some rather disobliging and indeed illegal suggestions about what should happen with asylum seeker hotels. It's a little bit off your brief, but you won't be surprised, as a former Justice Secretary, this question's come your way, Mr. Gould.
I'm not surprised, and Christine, you're perfectly entitled to answer that question. What I would say, I don't think it'd be right for me to get to comment on individual cases. There's been a court case, there's been a Court of Appeal hearing. Those judges have seen all the evidence here.
People are surprised by this, though, Mr. Gould.
They are.
I mean, for instance, someone who actually physically threw rocks at a police officer got fewer months in jail than someone who sent out an absolutely vile, reprehensible, actionable social media post, Mr. Gould.
The point I would make is that when you look at an individual case, you have to understand all the circumstances, all the factors, and I think it's hard when you have not done that to kind of comment upon it. So I'm reluctant to be drawn into individual cases. But I do understand the upset on this case.
The work you and your colleagues have put in, how will we know it's a success? How many prisoners do you think this could affect? How many thousands? And when might it be in effect?
I think the test of this is to ensure that we are not in a position where we have emergency releases again.
Ever? You're confident?
Well, for the foreseeable next few years.
So there won't be another one now? You think we can address that?
I believe if we implement this report fully, we will not be seeing emergency releases over the next few years. I very much hope that that is the case. I also hope we move to a system where we are more effective in terms of reducing reoffending, that contributes towards bringing down crime, and that we can have a reset, which I think is a better balanced criminal justice system in which prison plays its part, but also what happens in the community plays a bigger part too.
Going to hold you to a number. How many prison places would you hope this might free up? 5,000, 6,000, 10,000?
More in the region of 10,000. Our numbers are 9,800 if this is implemented in full. If we can really crack on with improving rehabilitation, I hope that number will be higher compared to what it's projected to be.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. David Gawke, former senior Conservative politician who chairs that Ministry of Justice Sentencing Review. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I will be back with you, of course, tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. I wonder whether that last caller could have joined in the right-wing media's attempt to turn a woman who publicly called for a pogrom into some sort of cause célèbre. Absolutely extraordinary scenario, but perhaps a direct consequence of the narrative surrounding immigration in general that we've been exposed to in recent years. So, guess what happens this morning? The numbers have been published. 9 out of 10 of the UK public are apparently not expecting the figures that the Office of National Statistics have just released. If you listen to my programme, you're probably bored of hearing me tell you what was about to happen. Well, it just has. I would like to build up a little bit of tension, but I'm 99.9% certain that you're about to hear the figures in the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the former Justice Secretary David Gawke has told LBC that short prison terms are pretty useless. He's published a government-commissioned review into sentencing in England and Wales, including greater use of community sentences. Violent criminals could be released earlier, and more sex offenders could be chemically castrated. Mr. Gawke says the focus must be on preventing crime in the future.
Punishment is important. It is part of the system. We shouldn't think that punishment only means prison. There will be people, for example, who a driving ban will be a real inconvenience and difficulty for them, and it will feel like punishment. But we also have to recognise that it's not just about punishment, it is also about rehabilitation.
Ministers are expected to accept the majority of the recommendations to help ease jail overcrowding. The UK's net migration figure halved from 860 to 431,000 in the year to December. It measures the difference between the number of people moving to the UK and leaving the country. The reduction follows restrictions introduced in early 2024 on people eligible to travel to Britain on work or study visas. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has condemned the killing of two Israeli embassy staff in Washington, D.C. The man and woman, a young couple, were leaving at an event at at a Jewish museum when they were shot dead last night. A 30-year-old suspect shouted "Free Palestine" as he was detained by police. A ceremony to sign over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius has been called off at the last minute. It had been due to take place this morning, but was blocked by a High Court injunction issued overnight. Downing Street insisted the agreement is the right thing, but it wouldn't comment on the legal case. The Shadow Justice Secretary, Robert Jenrick, has told LBC, "It's right, there's been a pause."
All power to the group that have brought this legal challenge. I hope it succeeds, and I hope it forces Keir Starmer to change course. It's deeply embarrassing, but what I ultimately care about is the British national interest, and we mustn't be giving away sovereign territory that we need for our security merely because of a non-binding judgment by a foreign court.
England's cricketers are about to take on Zimbabwe in a test match for the first time in more than 20 years. A one-off four-day match gets underway at Trent Bridge this morning. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 87.38. That's down 47. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 18. LBC weather largely dry with bright spells, but a band of cloud and rain moving southwards across England and Wales. A high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Got an unexpected message, phone call or email that claims to be from HMRC? Take care. It could be a criminal pretending to be us. To protect yourself, never rush to share personal information or part with your money. Learn to recognise signs of a scam, such as being put under pressure to share bank details. And if something seems fishy, report it to HMRC straight away by searching HMRC Scams on gov.uk. Protect, recognise, report.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A very good morning to you. Extraordinary news if you haven't been paying attention. Entirely predictable news if you have. The fall in net migration, just reported by the Office of National Statistics, stands at 49% in 2024. That is the number of people arriving in the UK minus the number of people leaving. And half, give or take a few bodies, is the percentage figure. Estimated, and of course there's room for review, estimated net migration to the UK stood at a provisional 431,000 in the year to December of last year, December 2024, which is down 50% from the year to December 2023. It is, and it is the largest numerical drop on record. The largest numerical drop since records began. And it's only 4 minutes after ten, and you know how it works. I often come on air without knowing where we're going to be at 10:15, let alone 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But I'm already wondering whether it matters a jot to the overweening narrative. I'm already wondering. For a couple of reasons, some of them obvious, some of them perhaps less so. One of the more obvious reasons is that, listen, if I framed the question in this way, I suddenly realised how arrogant it would make me sound. So I did a trail that would ordinarily play out at about 9:45, just, you know, in the final, the closing quarter of Nick's show. You know how, if you listen, you've heard it before. But because David Gawke was in the studio, very impressive politician, David Gawke, but because he was in the studio, they dropped the adverts, which meant they didn't play my little trail. But my little trail would have said something like this. I've been telling you for months that net migration was about to halve. How on earth could 9 out of 10 people have not been expecting it to, which is what the latest polling tells us? And I suddenly realised, as Eleanor began to prepare the trail that was never played, I suddenly realised that makes it sound like I think everybody in the entire country is listening to my burblings every morning, which would be a position, even by my standards, of quite epic conceit. But it does actually raise the question of how on earth could more people not know? How on earth could more people not know that net migration was set to fall by about a half. Something I've been telling you, I'll be hitting you over the head with this, because the numbers are generally available. They are not hard to find. Why would nobody bother to look? Answer, because there's a lot more, quotes, fun, end quotes, to be had, whipping up hatred about migration in general and asylum seekers in particular, to the point where the last call on Nick's show was joining in right-wing media's attempts to turn a woman who publicly called for a pogrom into some sort of folk hero or cause célèbre. The narrative about immigration, in other words, has often, but not always, been completely at odds with the reality. And that is why, at risk of being part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution, I find myself wondering whether it will matter a jot. I really do. Those are the figures. Those are the numbers. Some people, how do you think the immigration obsessives will respond to these numbers? Do you think they'll respond by claiming that it was, that it's all false, that it's not true, by pointing at the relatively tiny proportion of migration that comes over the English Channel irregularly, shouting about that instead of the overall totals, the actual numbers, accuse them of lying or accuse them of embellishment. I don't trust the figures. I don't trust them. Did you trust them when they were really, really high? Yes. Do you trust them now they've halved? No. Okay, what does that tell us about you? I've no idea, but I suspect that you're limbering up for a spell in Idiot's Corner. And I suspect today that Idiot's Corner is going to be rather busy, so much so I'm going to pause my inbox to see how it goes. 8 minutes after 10 is the time. So 431,000, down almost 300,000 on the previous figure, the six-month figure of 728, and down 50%, give or take, on the previous year. 8 minutes after 10. I don't know. I'm not celebrating these numbers, by the way. I want to make that absolutely clear. People who wish that the conversation around immigration was less toxic and less racist are not by any stretch of the imagination suggesting that we can accommodate 10 million people a year or 2 million people a year or even 1 million people a year in net totals. It's another very clever play that's used by immigration obsessives to claim that anybody who suggests that the problems of the average person in this country are more likely caused by plutocrats, oligarchs, the distribution of wealth and the collapse of workers' rights and trade unions than they are by your colleague who happens to have come here from Poland or Pakistan. Those of us who are actually committed to the ordinary working people of the UK, to the extent that we want them to know the